The hour of 10:15 having arrived, we will call the House Tax Committee to order January 19th, 2011. Members, today we have House File 129, David's Bill, Tax Aids and Credits. It would be my intention to go until noon today, and then we have the room for 6:15. We'll start up again at 6:15 till midnight, and then if we need the time. And I understand that you have a caucus till about like 6:30, so we do have the room at 6:15. We've got it posted. Then we'll be back here. We would not take any votes or anything until 6:30 or so, if we're ready for votes then, if we even go tonight. Then we'll be back in at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning till 9, because physically we have to allow staff to process the paperwork. It has to be in by 11, so it meets the four-hour rule at 3 o'clock for the floor tomorrow, so it can get moved to Ways and Means. So with that being said, the clerk will, or the committee legislative assistant will note the roll. We do have a quorum, and so, of course, we're officially gathered here today. Representative Crawford moves the minutes of January 18th, yesterday's meeting. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes before you? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, I'm going to take the bill from here because we'll have testifiers and House research here as we go through the bill. Do we have a sign-up sheet for testifiers back there? We have. You should be able to sign up if you want to testify. We have several folks that already want to testify, but let's get the bill before us. I'll move House File 129. We recommend it pass to the Committee on Ways and Means. Now I will move. Do we have the A2 amendment on?
Yeah, it's going to be distributed right now.
Okay, the A2 amendment's coming around. That's to get the bill in the order that the author would like. We'll just wait a second, make sure everybody gets the amendment. And so, members, I know this is kind of short notice. I don't really like the collapsed time frame here, but we will not. Everybody will get a chance to testify. We do have to shut her down at 9 tomorrow morning. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. And I brought this concern up in Property Tax Division earlier. And I just think, you know, we're talking about, in this bill, some huge ramifications for our property tax, aids, credits, and refunds. I mean, it has huge implications on property taxes and will lead to property tax increases. And I absolutely think, with all due respect, Mr. Chair, that this should go to the Property and Local Sales Tax Division. A couple reasons. Not only does it deal with property tax items, but there are, I think, 9 new members on the Property Tax Division. I mean, first-year members. And there are several of those members who do not serve on this tax committee. So, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that House File 129 be referred to the Property and Local Tax Division.
Okay, thank you. We have a motion before us. To the motion, Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, you and I were able to just speak just a few moments ago about this issue, and I was trying to give you a heads up again that what Representative Marquardt said is that, you know, I think it's a fair assessment. I'm sure Representative Chair Runbeck wants to weigh in, but there was quite a discussion in property taxes about this bill getting to property taxes, since there's a huge property tax impact in this bill. And so I would support the Marquardt motion, and Mr. Chair, I'd request a roll call.
Representative Lincheski requests a roll call. Any other discussion to the Marquardt motion? And just for committee members, I would respectfully speak against the motion. This bill, yes, there are some things, quite a few things having to do with property taxes. We're looking at the numbers here. We're not looking at any formula changes, any of those types of things. So members can vote how they wish. The committee legislative assistant will take the role on the Marquardt motion to refer House File 129 to the Property Tax Committee.
Representative Davids?
No.
Representative Loon? No. Representative Lincheski?
Yes.
Representative Anderson? Representative Bills?
No.
Representative Biskins?
No.
Representative Crawford?
No.
Representative Dabney?
Yes.
Representative Depke?
No.
Representative Downey? Representative Joskowski?
No.
Representative Erickson?
No.
Representative Garofalo? Representative Gottwalt? Representative Hortman?
Yes.
Representative Kiffmeyer?
No.
Representative Knuth?
Yes.
Representative Kunin?
Yes.
Representative Lesch?
I think yes.
Representative Loeffner?
Yes.
Representative Mack?
No.
Representative Marquardt?
Yes.
Representative Myra?
No.
Representative Paymar?
Yes.
Representative Rukavina? Representative Runbeck?
No.
Representative Tilbury? Representative Wardlow?
No.
There being 9 in the affirmative and 13 nays, the motion does not prevail. Okay, to get the bill in the order I'd like it, I'd move the A2 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, now this is all going a little fast here. And I'm a pretty fast guy, but even for me it's a little fast. So we'll be, if it's okay with the committee, what we'll be doing is we'll be hearing testimony on the bill, and we can be reading it, and because we needed to pass this so we could find out what was in it, if you will. So that being said, what we'll do is now we will open it up for testimony, and if members on any members of the committee need to be getting amendments drafted, there will be. We've got quite a few folks signed up to testify, so you could be getting any amendments drafted that you'd like, or. We will, when we get done with the testimony, there's a possibility if we don't have a whole lot of amendments, we'd be done by noon. Otherwise, we'll come back, as I said, at 6:15, and then at 6:30 when the DFL caucus gets out, we would not actually take any action until then. In fact, I'll tell you what we'll do is, Representative Lencheski, you're thinking that your caucus should be done about 6:30?
Mr. Chair, I apologize. As
Representative Lencheski?
I'm not usually in the know on that.
Representative Lencheski, I have no idea what my caucus is doing either. So,
I think so. Wednesdays, and I'm looking at other Democrats to help me. I think we generally have caucus from 4:30 to 6:30? Representative Hortman's a whip. Maybe she can tell us. But I think we're usually done by 6:30, so, Mr. Chair.
Okay, what we will do is if needed, it may not be needed, but if it is needed, what we'll do is we'll come back at 6:30 so that we don't have... missing members. Okay, with that being said, Representative Knuth, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it's, sorry, I should just wait, but I'm just hoping the author of the bill could give us an overview before we have testifiers, just so I, you know, as a new member of this committee, it would be really helpful for me to better understand this bill and just get your either one of our fiscal analysts or your explanation of it.
Thank you, Representative Knuth. That's a very good idea. We'll have an overview by Mr. Michael as to the bill as amended. I appreciate that, Representative Knuth. And then I'm going to ask this question before we start with that, though. Is there anybody in the audience here that would like to testify for the chairman's bill? I didn't really think so. Okay. Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just as people are deciding in the audience if they're testifying, in addition to Representative Knuth's request, historically, you know, we've been able to see the runs on the bills on LGA cuts by city and county aides by county. And do we have the runs so all members can see?
Representative Lencheski, they should be in the packet, I believe.
I don't think we have them. That's a county run.
Marquardt, you?
Okay. Mr. Chair, then, okay.
Representative Lencheski.
I appreciate that. I stand corrected. Can we also, though, ask for newer members, of which there are many, more on your side of the aisle, to have someone explain what a run is. I mean, I don't know that members here would actually necessarily know what they're looking at and how to find their cities. And Ms. Dalton, I know, could probably do it in a couple minutes. Just so
that's also a good idea. Representative Lencheski, Ms. Dalton, do you want to go to the front desk? Or just do it from there. Just do it from there. It's if you could describe it, please, for the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there are two runs in the packet. One is a longer run. It looks like this. This is aid and credit cuts for cities, and it's a city-by-city estimate of where the reductions fall under this bill. And then there is a two-sided single sheet that also has the same information for counties. I'll start with the county printout first because it's the simplest. Basically, it tells you what the county program aid, or CPA, is for certified in 2011 and the estimated market value credits to counties for the same year. The total aids and credits that each county gets, what would actually be paid under House File 129 in CPA and market value credits. And then the final column is the total aid and credit loss under this bill. And counties are...
Ms. Dalton, just you're saying that it's losses. Compared to last biennium, it'd be actually increases if you look at the total package. We're not cutting what they had the last biennium.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the cuts in House File 129 are essentially making permanent the cuts that were not made permanent last year in pay 2010.
Thank you. So we're not cutting what they got last year, but cutting what the what they may have certified at or what the increases were projected to be.
Mr. Chair, these are compared to what was actually paid in 2010 statewide. This is exactly the same. It's not quite the same in distribution because of some things that happened in the bill last year. But compared to what they were certified to get and what we told them they were going to get in August, this is an aid and credit loss.
Okay.
Mr.
Please,
Chair?
Please, Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Dalton. I'm trying to follow you in the Chair's conversation and read the run and the summary at the same time. So my city passed a budget in December. They would have based the budget off of statute at that time, and this will be a mid-year, were this to become law, if this becomes law, would be a mid-year cut in anticipated revenues to my city. Is that...
Ms. Dalton.
Did I thread the needle on that one?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, that would be correct. This would be a cut to their pay 2011 budgets that they set in December. Of 2010.
Okay, so the promised money would be cut under this bill, and the budget that they built wouldn't work anymore.
They would have to make adjustments.
Oh. Okay.
Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank
but they're not being cut from what they actually received in 2010.
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Okay. It's nice we're both correct. Ms. Dahl. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think you kind of cleared that up a little bit, Ms. Dalton. That was a question I had for you, because if you use it from, I don't know if it's promised, hope for, I think most of my cities that I've talked to have been pretty realistic about the state of the budget here in Minnesota. And so, at least in my areas, it would be nice, but I don't think they considered it something that was an absolute at any rate. But on the numbers that we have here, is it a... how does that compare to what they did actually get in 2010?
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, to the extent that it was possible, we tried to mirror what they actually got in pay 2010. It was not entirely possible because $9 million of the LGA cut that occurred in pay 2010, which was to an based on an individual city-by-city basis, mm-hmm. was then transferred to an appropriation increase and spread across all cities based on the formula. And so that's why it won't be quite dollar for dollar in every individual city. I cannot say every city is going to get exactly the same cut that they got in pay 2010, because there was $308 million of cuts made between the two aid and credit cuts made in 2010, and $75 million of those cuts were made permanent last year. And so it's how did you spread, you know, and some of it was then redistributed via the formula this year of that $75 million that was made permanent. And so then it's how do you make the rest permanent given what had been certified as already reductions, because part of the reductions that were made last year did not apply to smaller counties, smaller cities, or smaller townships. But once the appropriation was lowered, that spread some of those cuts to those smaller cities this year.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Jeff Meyer.
I think in its simplest form, then, we're looking at basically minor changes or smaller changes to one degree or another, but it's basically this proposal is pretty much the same as 2010.
Ms. Dahl.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, that is the intent, and to the extent that we could get it to that level, that's what is attempted to do in this
Thank
bill.
Thank you.
Representative Kiffmeyer?
No, I think.
Could you please proceed, Ms. Dalton, or if you're whatever you need for time, and then we'll go to Mr. Michael for description of the bill as amended.
Mr. Chair, very simply, on the county run, we first show the information for the counties in the seven-county metro area, and then for the information for the counties in the in greater Minnesota, and they're all listed alphabetically. We have the same information in the city run. However, we have it organized slightly differently, and I think that is what Representative Lincheski thought maybe for freshman members it might be useful to realize. For city aid purposes, we actually group cities into types or clusters based on common characteristics. So we have center cities, we have major cities in outstate Minnesota, we have regional centers, we have diversified cities in the metropolitan area, which are cities that have a lot of residential and commercial. And so the cities on this run are listed first. The metropolitan, seven-county metro area cities are listed first. In their groups, and followed by the cities in greater Minnesota, and they're all listed alphabetically within your group, their groups. If you are having trouble finding a city of yours, just send me a note and I will tell you where it is.
Thank you very much, Ms. Dalton. Any questions for Ms. Dalton? And members, if you have any questions as we go, please just Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Dalton, I'm still not perfectly clear, but I'm looking at the county aids and credits run you have here, and the far right column then is a representation of the difference between what this bill would do and what was in law prior to last session when the legislature actually brought forward a reduction. Is that right?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is actually incorrect. The column, the far column on the right, is the loss in pay 2011 budgets to counties compared to what we told them they were going to get when they were setting their pay 2011 budgets. So this is the difference between what was certified this year and what they actually would get paid under this bill.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Dalton, do we have the numbers to tell us or run that shows what counties would be getting under this bill relative to what they received last year from last year's legislature?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, I don't have that run here. If we are going to meet at 6:30, we can have that run available by 6:30.
Okay.
Or we could be done by noon, too, and then you could get it to them later.
Mr. Chair, as former Chair Abrams said, we have many tools in our toolbox, but occasionally you have to give us time to get those tools out.
Point Point well taken. Thank you, Ms. Dalton. Okay, let's go with a description of the bill as amendment as amended. Mr. Michael, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Article 1 contains some of the provisions that Ms. Dalton was just talking about. It essentially makes permanent the pay 2010 aid and credit reductions that the 2010 legislature enacted. Secondly, it reduces permanently the percentage of rent constituting property taxes under the property tax refund for renters from 19% of gross rent paid to 15%. It repeals the political contribution refund program that has been suspended for the current biennium, and it also caps the payments under the Sustainable Forest Program at $100,000. And again, this is a provision that was also in effect for the current biennium, so that makes that permanent. Article 2, which is contained in the amendment, adds a federal conformity article to the bill, and this basically conforms Minnesota's individual income and corporate taxes to all of the federal changes that were enacted, but excluding the last tax bill that was passed by the lame duck Congress in December. Just to quickly go over some of the provisions that are in that will be included, is the provision that was discussed yesterday, the income exclusion for health insurance for adult children up to age 26. This would make that effective going forward for tax year 11 and following. The change in the pre-tax flexible spending accounts for over-the-counter medicines and the $2,500 cap rather than the $5,000 cap. Increase in the exclusion for adoption assistance. The change in the deductibility of medical expenses for itemizers from 7.5% floor to 10%. Those are all provisions that were part of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. Small Business Job Act of 2010. This has in it the increase in the small business capital gain exclusion for small business going from 75% to 100%. It extends the 5-year rule for built-in gain on S-corps to tax year 11. The one thing that's different than our past policies on section 179, this provision conforms to section 179 for tax year 11, which in the past we've required the 80% add back and then deduction of the balance over 5 years. This would conform for tax year 11, so this would follow federal. Another item that may be worth noting is that the federal act provided that employer-provided cell phones are not listed property, and this would conform to that so that employers don't need to report a fair market value for the provision of those cell phones. Allows the conversion of traditional IRAs to Roth IRAs for individuals that have more than $100,000 of adjusted gross income. I think those are probably the highlights of the most significant provisions that we'd be conforming to. With that, that's sort of a summary of the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. Any questions for Mr. Michael? Representative Lencheski?
Mr. Chair, I don't have a question for Mr. Michael yet, but is Ms. Templin and Ms. Schill going to actually walk through the spreadsheet, particularly Ms. Templin on the conformity items?
I Representative Lencheski, I really think they should. Is Ms. Templin here?
Yep.
And we see Ms. Schill here.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members, I can start with the spreadsheet.
Ms. Schill, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Kathy Schill, House Fiscal. Members, in your packet, you will find three sheets saying house taxes. They look like this. I can walk you through them. This set of sheets addresses the bill as introduced and does not include the federal conformity components that Ms. Templin will address after we review these. The first sheet is a summary of all of the changes associated with this bill. The first section talks about end of session SS1 reductions. Those are the ratified reductions, ratified unallotments, and so that's meant for a comparison. You can see that they were applied to fiscal years 2010-2011. In the middle of the sheet, we have House File 129 entitled The Proposed Permanent Unallotments. And just as a sidebar, it's helpful for members to have either another sheet or a ruler to read everything across. It just makes go a little bit easier. There you will see the reduction in the renter's PTR, the figures 52.6 million, 53.3 million, that area of the sheet. You can see for FY 12 and 13 and carried out in the years 14 and 15, the planning years. Reductions to sustainable forest credits, capping this at $100,000 in credits. The cost savings is $8.1 million in fiscal 12, $8.4 million in fiscal 13. And the elimination of the political contribution refund, cost savings $5.4 million in fiscal 12 and $6.4 million in fiscal 13. Moving down the sheet, you can see the freeze to local government aid at fiscal 11 levels, cost savings of $100.7 million per year. The freeze to county program aid at fiscal 11 levels, the cost savings of $32.5 million in fiscal 12 and $32 million in fiscal 13. And then we have reductions in the market value credit for cities, for counties. I will just give you the summary. $95.7 million in each fiscal 12 and 13. And then a small impact on the cost savings in the market, agricultural market value credit. Total reductions for local government aids, $228.9 million in fiscal 12, $228.4 million in fiscal 13. And then move on down to the subtotal before the interactions, $295.0 million in fiscal 12, $296.5 million in fiscal 13. We talk about interactions when you have changes in aids to local governments and changes in market value credit. This impacts two different areas, property tax refunds from levy changes, and these are assumptions that are agreed upon by both legislative staff and executive level staff. The property tax refund impact will happen in the next year associated with the cut. So you see in fiscal 13 an impact on it actually is a positive impact. It reduces your cost savings by $12.7 million in fiscal 13 for the property tax refund interaction, and for the income tax refund interaction you have a cost of $12.8 million. Therefore, adding in those interactions, the net reductions for tax refunds, aids, and credits is $295 million in fiscal 12 and $271 million in fiscal 13.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. And for the spreadsheets for federal conformity, you will have some items distributed to you, two of which are revenue estimates for the two federal acts that are being proposed to be conformed to. That is the Small Business Jobs Act and the Patient Protection Act. And then in addition to that...
Members, excuse me, Ms. Templin, we're passing out the numbers here right now. So Ms. Templin's addressing...
Okay. In addition to that, I have a preliminary spreadsheet that is being distributed that sums up all of the numbers on the revenue estimate. So I will give the staff a few minutes to distribute these. But in total, the House file, the A2 amendment for federal conformity, the cost for fiscal 11 are, and this is, again, this is preliminary, $3.735 million in fiscal 11 and a revenue gain of $16.6 million in fiscal 12 and 13 and a revenue loss of $14.6 million in fiscal 14 and 15. Now that members are getting copies of the revenue estimates, we can walk through this the preliminary spreadsheet. Starting with line 9, this shows the detail for the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. I won't go through every provision, but I will just highlight again, line 14 shows the cost of health benefits to children up to age 26, exclusion for employer-provided amounts and deduction for self-employed persons. The cost of this provision is $1.9 million in fiscal 11, $8.1 million in fiscal 12 and 13, and $11.5 million in the 14-15 biennium. Again, this provision, we heard House File 79 yesterday, and that provision was for conformity for just tax year 10 only. This, in this amendment, the A2 amendment, this is conformity for all years. And so that is why you see the difference in cost relative to what you saw yesterday. So the total revenue loss for conformity to the Patient Protection Act is $2.28 million in fiscal 11, $8.3 million, almost $8.4 million in 12 and 13, and a revenue gain of $6.7 million in fiscal 14 and 15. Moving along to the Small Business Jobs Act, I am going to just go over the cost of the provisions relative to income tax and relative to corporate tax. And I might have also with the Small Business Jobs Act, there is one deviation in this spreadsheet that doesn't reflect what is in the A2 amendment yet. It's relating to Section 179 expensing on lines 20 and 30. We are still waiting for estimates for Section 179 expensing. And so these, again, are just based on what is, this is where we will have more information in a revised spreadsheet for Section 179 expensing. But to summarize, again, individual income tax, the cost in the Small Jobs Act.
Excuse me, Ms. Templin, when do you think you may have those for the members?
As soon as I can get them.
That was very helpful. Ms. Templin, please proceed.
Okay. Individual income tax provisions, fiscal 11, $230,000. Fiscal 12 and 13, there's a revenue gain, and I'm looking at line 26 of $10,080,000, and a revenue loss in fiscal 14 and 15 of $8.5 million. And the corporate tax provisions in this Federal Conformity Act, there's a cost of $1.2 million in fiscal 10 and 11, a revenue gain of $14.9 million, and a revenue loss of $12.9 million in the fiscal 14 and 15 biennium. And that is a very quick summary of the provisions in the A2 amendment.
Questions for Ms. Templin, Ms. Schill?
If there are no questions for
For Ms. Templin, Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe for Mr. Michael on what Ms. Templin just asked. And it's not really fair, I guess, to ask any House staff, either Ms. Templin or Mr. Michael, because it's really for the Department of Revenue. But I don't understand the Small Business Job Act of Congress, the capital gains numbers. Can Mr. Michael opine why they're zero? It doesn't matter.
Representative Lincheski, what line are you on there?
The first sheet of the department's explanation of the update.
Thank you. Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lincheski, I think the reason, again, I'm not sure which line are you referring to?
It's Representative Lincheski.
Zero across the top from the department on why the capital gains numbers remain at zero for the full 5 years?
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lincheski, the reason for that is that in order to qualify for this exclusion, there's a 5-year holding period for this stock. And so in order for, and the way Congress enacted this increase, it was stock purchased after the date that was in the bill. And so, of course, when the Department of Revenue looks at it, it says within the forecast window, nobody can sell stock purchased at that after that date, and we won't suffer a revenue loss until, you know, after fiscal 15.
Representative Lincheski.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Can you just, Mr. Michael, guess then if, you know, when it does show up, because it's outside the forecast window here, and, you know, whatever year that'll be, 16, 17, is there a price tag that you're aware of that might be? I mean, I know that's really hard to project, but.
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lincheski, what I can do is I can go and look at the Joint Committee on Taxation's estimates and see what shows up nationally outside the window. I think this is a relatively constrained and narrow set of rules that you can qualify for this kind of stock. But we can look at, Cynthia and I can look at the Joint Committee estimates for 16 through 20, since they do 10-year estimates, and tell you what they're estimating federally and sort of apportion that to Minnesota to give you an idea of the magnitude of this.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Templin, could you review again line 15 for me? I didn't catch it, but the reason for the difference from a negative number to a positive number in each of the two bienniums.
Ms. Templin.
Representative Drazkowski, Mr. Chair, in fiscal 10 and 11, there is a negative $0.3 million revenue loss, and that is the sum of lines 12 through 14 and of those provisions. And in lines, again, looking at lines 12 through 14, in the fiscal 12 and 13 biennium, there's an $8.4 million revenue loss. And then in fiscal 14, there's a positive revenue gain of $6.8 million. And if you look at line 10, there is a provision where there would be a revenue gain to the state in the 14-15 biennium of $18.4 million. And that is because this provision increases the floor for itemized deductions for medical expenses from 7.5 to 10%. So taxpayers would have to have expenses in excess of 10% to deduct those costs, and that creates a revenue gain, and that is the reason for the positive revenue amount in the 14-15 biennium.
Representative Drazkowski.
That's all. Thank you, Ms. Templin.
Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kind of a similar question. Could you explain on line 26 the swing in the fiscal year 12-13 biennium of a $10 million gain to the next biennium, a loss of $8
million? Mr. Chair,
Ms.
Representative Mack. Yes, it's kind of the same thing going on, but different provisions in the fiscal 12 and 13 biennium, line 20 and line 20 and 21, there are provisions with Section 179 expensing and bonus depreciation. These particular estimates will change as discussed earlier, but I think the behavioral effect of what's happening with the revenue amount will stay the same, where there's itemized there's deductions that create a revenue gain to the state, but in the next biennium they create a loss in the 14 and 15 biennium. And so that changes the total amounts to the state. So and those two provisions are fairly large, and that's what's causing the swings.
So Matt. Mr. Michael, I have a question on line 25, or whoever might answer this. In conforming with the Small Business Jobs Act, permit partial annuitizations of a non-qualified annuity contract. Is that through Rule 72T? It wouldn't be 72. No, it'd be 72Q, not 72T.
Mr. Michael, what did I do here?
Mr. Chairman, essentially what this provision does is, under prior federal law, in order to annuitize a lump sum payment, you were actually required to send it off to two different contracts. What this essentially does is just change the rules to allow, if you have a lump sum of $200,000, you can opt with one company and one contract to annuitize half of that or a third of it without going through the additional sort of cumbersome process of getting two separate contracts. So, yes, it is a change to Section 72 of the Internal Revenue Code, and I'm not sure which subclause or paragraph of the code.
I think 72Q, does it affect at all the 59.5 rule?
Mr. Chairman, no, it does not.
So, Mr. Michael, they'd still be penalized unless they use a 72Q, right. Not qualified or 70. Does it affect qualified annuities?
Mr. Chairman, this does apply to qualified annuities as well.
It just says non-qualified annuities.
I believe, as a result of this, that you can, the partial annuitization does not disqualify and make a qualified annuity a non-qualified annuity as a result of this.
We'll talk about that later. Okay. This is just, like I say, a page turner. Actually, whatever. Okay. With that, we will. Any other questions for Ms. Schill, Templin, Michael, Dalton, or others? Otherwise, we will be taking. Thank you for that description. Okay. Oh, back to Ms. Schill. Sorry.
Mr. Chair.
I
didn't cover these. We were going over spreadsheet items. These two pages are meant to simplify the bird's eye view of what is going on. The letter size page is current law, and it shows you the impacts for fiscal 11 right here and what we did last year. And then as you move forward to the legal size paper, the one with the arrows on it, this will show the impact of House File 129. So it is meant to show that you're literally making permanent cuts that were done in fiscal 11. And if there are questions, let me know. But it's by both jurisdiction and by program, so you can track it.
Thank you very much for that information, Ms. Schill and Ms. Templin and Mr. Michael and Ms. Dalton. Okay, so Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in the Property Tax Division, we just went through a lot of the aids and credits, and we had examples of sort of impact on an average renter, an average homeowner, an average ag property owner. Has anyone been able to do that in terms of what's the impact on what types of small businesses get hurt or helped in various years here? Those sorts of things. It's always nice to kind of take it down from that 110,000 level to actually understanding what's happening. I understand, I mean, from the numbers, it's clear that property taxes are going up, income taxes are going up for some people, refunds are going down, but it would really be good to have an understanding of who is it that we're impacting here, and has anyone been able to put that together yet?
Mr. Michael, or Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, we do not have a baseline 2010 property tax model completed at this point. We don't get certified 2010 levy information for all the local governments until the end of January, so we can't start making modeling projections of, if you make these cuts, what happens in 2010, because we don't know.
Ms. Dalton.
I was going to say, however, I will say this. Cuts made in pay 2010 at this point could only result in either deferred costs, revenue raised outside of the property tax system, or reductions in local government spending, because there is no way to raise the pay 2010 property taxes at this point. I mean, the paid 2011 property taxes at this point, they are set. Whether a local government would try to recoup it in pay 2012 by an increased levy is what will be discussed once we do a baseline pay 2012 model, which and that won't come out until March.
Well, thank you. I mean, that's helpful. I think most of us understand kind of the local government thing. I mean, they just set their taxes through their budgets a month ago. But for, like, the individuals who just who've already submitted their renters' refunds, and also I don't understand a whole lot yet. I have a lot to learn about the small business tax provisions. And if I could understand, like, even what the definition of a small business is, what size, and who would particularly benefit or be hurt by those provisions, sort of examples, even if we don't have it all worked out, that would be helpful.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Okay, we will now go into the shortest portion of today's tax committee hearing. Anyone that wants to testify in support of my bill? Thanks for your support. We will now go into folks that have concerns about the Davids bill. We will start with...
Who are you going to start with?
I guess just line up. Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know that we want to hear from everybody. Will we have an opportunity to hear from the Department of Revenue on this bill as well?
Yes.
Hear kind of the governor's take on...
Yes.
Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, if we could, if you could please identify your name and who you represent for the record and express your concerns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Joe Matthews with the Association of Minnesota Counties. Just want to be on the record. We understand that there will be cuts this year, and so, you know, we don't think it's realistic to expect to be held harmless. For new members of the committee, just wanted to let you know that we do receive cuts in all areas of the state budget practically, and so there are finance committees that will be cutting us as well. You know, as we go through this, there's a number of folks on this committee, including the chair and the leading minority member, who have been very helpful in the past on the issue of maintenance of effort. That is an area that we're going to try and work with, and our strategy will be to pursue more flexibility to help us absorb these as we go forward. And with that, I'd be happy to take questions, but I'll try to be brief, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Matthews with the Association of Minnesota Counties. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sir, how many areas of maintenance of effort do counties have responsibility for? Can you tell us?
Mr. Matthews.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, I don't know the number off the top of my head, but there are a number. The largest ones tend to be in areas such as library funding, mental health, chemical dependency, and others. I think Representative Loeffler might actually know more than I do. She's been a great resource on this in the past, but that's the ones I know off the top of my head. Many are in human services.
Representative Erickson?
No, that's them. Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Matthews of the counties? If not, we'll go to the next testifier. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Keith Carlson. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association that consists of 13 of the 16 largest counties in the state of Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And I also want to express my appreciation to the chair and leadership for taking into account the full array of cuts that are being contemplated in this first budget reduction bill. In addition to the $170 million worth of cuts that's contained in this legislation, there's another $64 million of cuts that will be happening to counties in the human services area in the bill that will later be heard in the Health and Human Services Finance Committee. So the total array of cuts in this, again, first phase of dealing with the budget deficit facing the state is $233 million. And again, we're very appreciative that the cuts in here take into account the cuts that we're taking in other areas of the budget. One other issue that I want to raise with the committee, in addition to the mandate MOE relief that Mr. Matthews has already raised, is the manner in which the cuts are made in the market value based credits in 2012. 2012 will be the fifth year in which what appears on homeowners and farmers' statements as state paid agricultural and homestead credit will be substantially more than what is actually paid. For 2010, the total amount of credit that appeared on the statement was $302 million. What the state actually paid was a little bit less than $175 million, or less than 42% less than what was represented to the taxpayer. I think it's obvious at this point that the state can't afford to fund this program fully. And we would ask that down the line, when the committee is putting together its omnibus bill or considering further changes, that you look at reconfiguring the credit so that what appears on the tax statement conforms with what is actually paid in state relief to local governments to reimburse them for that reduction. With that, I'd be stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Any questions for Mr. Carlson? Okay, thank you very much, gentlemen, and the door's open. Don't be strangers. I know you won't. Next. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Gary Carlson, unrelated to Keith Carlson. I work for the organization called the League of Minnesota Cities, and for those of you who are new to the legislature, we represent 830 of the 854 cities across the state. Virtually every large city is a member of our organization. Thank you for the time to testify today. I'd like to just go through a few points on the bill. Several of my points have already been covered by questions of members, so I'm going to try to be brief and eliminate those comments. Let me just remind some of the new members as well that this is the fourth consecutive budget where we've had cuts to local units of government and to cities. Going back to the fall of 2008, cities lost $66 million of money through the unallotment that was done to help balance that immediate state budget deficit. In 2009, we lost $64 million. In 2010, we lost a total of $180 million. We had some cuts already enacted for pay 2011 that were enacted in last year's supplemental budget bill that totaled about $56 million if you add them all up. So this is in on top of those, and as your partners at the local level, we've shared in your budget pain. We understand your budget pain. We understand the challenges you face. And I think every city official around the state is well aware of the magnitude of the deficit. Just a couple of quick points. The timing of these cuts is somewhat difficult. Your pay 2012 budget cuts that show up in here for cities affect our pay 2011 city calendar year budgets. As Representative Loeffler just indicated, those levies were set in December, and we cannot adjust our levies until roughly a year from now. And even then, if we adjusted those levies, the revenues would not be available to the city until about June of 2012. So the timing of these issues with respect to the property tax system is something to consider very carefully because we really don't have immediacy in recovering because the property tax system has one point at which we can adjust our property tax levies. I would ask you to consider very briefly, if you sat in the seats of many of our city councils, and many of you have, think about the challenges that a city official just faced, because they knew the state budget deficit was here. They knew they were going to have something coming down the pike in terms of cuts. But being a responsible council member or a responsible mayor, are you going to raise property taxes without knowing what the cut would be? Would you make serious cuts in city services and staff without knowing precisely what the cut would be? Our cities have been waiting on pins and needles, wondering what would happen in the legislature. This is our first glimpse. We appreciate talking about this early in the session, but just so you know, our city officials have still struggled. Even though we know about the depth of the deficit, it still is a very difficult challenge as you sit in a city council member seat. Representative Davis, you've been a mayor, and you know how difficult those decisions are when you're dealing with people out there that are struggling themselves through the depths of this current recession. Finally, I'd like to echo a little bit more of what Mr. Keith Carlson indicated about the market value homestead credit, and I'd like to attack it a little differently. Our cities tell the counties that they need a dollar of property tax levy. The counties spread that levy. They reduce that amount by the amount of the homestead credit, and we collect maybe, say, 95 cents of the dollar. The rest of it is supposed to be paid by the state. We truthfully tell taxpayers we're levying more than what we actually receive because the state is not coming through as the partner in providing that tax relief. We agree with the counties. We would like to see a way to fix that system and make sure that the amount actually paid by the state for the credit actually shows up on the taxpayer form. The first time you could do that would be in the pay 2012 calendar year, because everything has already been set for pay 2011. Finally, Representative Druskowski is carrying a mandate relief bill. We've met with him, and we'd like to continue to work on some of the mandate relief provisions in there. We think there's some good ideas that have been circulated already. We've given him some additional ideas. Those will help us deal with these budget cuts. We do, however, understand that some of those mandate relief items may not have an immediate impact, and I'd like you to consider that as you consider the overall impact on local units of government. Some of those cost benefits may accrue over years, but some of those will not be available immediately, but we applaud your efforts to try to find some mandate relief for the local units of government. With that, I would stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Before we go into questions for Mr. Carlson, I would like to just ask two things here. One is there anyone here from the governor's office?
Did we call?
could you represent the governor's office, please? Is there anyone here from the, who's here from the Department of Revenue? Okay, we do have, okay, very good. So we do want to hear from, you know, Tax Committee, the governor's office may want to have some folks here. I don't think we've cut them yet. Let's have some folks here, because the committee will have questions for Department of Revenue, Governor's Office, and of course, as the Department of Revenue is here. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Carlson, do you, I know it's early, you've just had this, the levies certified in all the cities, but do you have, or will you have any, how quickly will you have that information to know what their actual levy plus aids and what their certified amounts were? I mean, how many, I guess my question is, how many kind of assumed, and I think rightly so, that there wouldn't be any additional money and probably no more money than 2010 to base their budgets on. How many did that responsible thing versus building in a budget based on money that, you know, was not likely to show up?
Mr. Carlson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck. As Pat Dalton indicated, we'll have final certified information probably toward the end of the month, but let me give you one broad glimpse at what happened this last year. The total cuts to cities in pay 2010 from those aids that were paid out in July, October, and December of 2010 for cities amounted to $180 million of reductions. The proposed levies for cities for pay 2011 that were certified back on September 15th. These are the initial levies used to calculate the truth in taxation statements. Those rose by about $65 million, I believe, Pat Dalton, for cities. So about one in every $3 that was lost in 2010 was a levy increase in 2011. I don't know what the final numbers will be, but I won't be able to tell you until we have final compiled information precisely how cities reacted with those cuts, so I apologize.
Representative Runbeck.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just in response to Representative Runbeck's comments, you know, Representative Runbeck, this isn't a game. I mean, this is a formula set in law upon which cities are told that they can rely on something. Now, if they can look and expect that the state is continuing to play the game, you have to say, okay, well, our mayors and city councils expect to anticipate the game. I don't think that's their responsibility. The buck has to stop somewhere. The buck has to stop here. And we have to get our house in order to ensure we're not consistently passing the buck. So I just wanted to make that point, because I don't think it's a fair characterization. Cities, I think, are better at managing their money sometimes than we are, as is seen by the historical ebb and flow of budget deficits. But I don't think that means that cities should be expected to anticipate because we fail to do our job.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair.
Excuse
and
me, Representative Runbeck.
Do you want to respond
to that, and then we'll go to Representative Biskin. I'm sorry, Representative Biskin.
You know, without actual money appearing, I mean, it seems to me that the budgets then were based on, you know, a bit of a wish. So, I mean, I don't consider it a game either, but, you know, looking at reality, I would say that odds were that they weren't going to get the additional money. So, I mean, I think, you know, be conservative and base your budget based on something that you know is going to show up and you can live with.
Representative Runbeck, I wouldn't ask Representative Lash to be conservative, but That's okay. Representative Lesh, then to Biskins, then to before we go, Representative Lesh, you'll have the floor here, but how many more people are there in the room that wish to testify with their concerns on the chairman's bill? Just two. Then we'll see, I guess we'll see if there's some amendments. If not, we could wrap it up. If not, we'll be here till midnight. So, Representative Lesh.
Okay. Well, and just briefly, Mr. Chair, in response, you know, I know what you're saying here. Well, this bill does do that, and essentially makes these permanent, or supposedly changes the formula permanently. And everyone at this table is going to have to be accountable for that, for the LGA that my city is losing per capita. The LGA, for example, that Representative Draskowski's city is losing, which is, I think, twice as much, $321, amounting to a $211 per capita increase for each of his constituents. So if that's the case, fine, but I'm just saying there has to be some follow-through on that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lesh. Representative Biskins?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the representative. No, you're right, this isn't a game, all right? And it's time we stop playing it like it is a game. Right. And one thing we have to understand, and as a former city council member, I understood full well that there is a constitutional principle that one legislature cannot bind the hands of future legislatures. We talk here about promises made by the 86th legislature. Well, the 86th legislature is over. We're now in the 87th legislature, and we have made no promises to anyone. We can't continue doing what we're doing. It's not working. The 86th legislature and the governor made some real bad budget decisions back then. And it's our time to step to the plate and fix those decisions that were made. Promises were made by a legislature which no longer exists. Constitutional law says that our hands are not bound. As a city council member, I knew that principle and acted accordingly.
Mr. Carlson, any comments?
No, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much.
Okay. The next testifier, please. Thank you. Representative Biskins, Lesh, and Runbeck. Okay. So these are the final two here. Anybody else that wants to get in this one? Okay. We have... I don't have my name on this, so members, I'll just explain. I'm passing this out on behalf of whoever's up at the table. I'm not going to pass it off. So the handout will not have a name on it. It will not have a name on it, but it's from me. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair, excuse me, members, my name is Steve Peterson. I'm with the Flaherty and Hood, who is here on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. We represent 75 cities throughout Greater Minnesota. The handout is here on my behalf, and I appreciate the chair spreading it out to the rest of the members. We've been here and we've talked about how this bill is about reducing the numbers and how it's about what cities were receiving last year. But I think the one thing that we haven't talked about, and maybe it's because it's January outside but feels a little bit like May inside, is what the policies are actually for. So the handout that's going around, I'm just kind of stalling until it gets all the way around here, talks about local government aid and kind of why we have it. What is the purpose of this and what happens when you reduce it? On this chart, I've put a series of cities on the bottom, ranging from Browns Valley up to East Gull Lake on the right. And the blue big fat bars correspond with the left-hand axis, and that's their tax base. That's how much revenue one of those cities can generate if they had a tax rate of 1 per person. How much revenue per person that city generates if they had a tax rate of 1. So Browns Valley, which is one of the poorest property poor communities in the state, it's like the 6th property poor community in the state, if it had a tax rate of 1, would generate $1.88 per person. So for Browns Valley to generate the same amount of revenue as Wyndham, they'd have to have twice as high as tax rate. For Wyndham to generate the same amount of revenue as St. Cloud, they would have twice as high as tax rate as St. Cloud. For St. Cloud to generate the same amount of revenue as Baxter, they would have to have a tax rate twice as high as Baxter. For Baxter to generate the same amount of revenue as East Gull Lake, which is kind of an anomaly, but it's kind of fun to put on there, they'd almost have to triple their tax rate. The idea being is that there is a great disparity in the amount of property tax base among cities. Cities that are very poor, cities in the middle, cities with higher needs, and cities that have a strong tax base and can run self-sufficiently. The local government aid program assists in equalizing these tax bases. It's part of the reason we have it. You can see on a per capita basis, Browns Valley gets a substantial amount of local government aid. Browns Valley does not have a strong tax base. As we go through and the tax bases go up, the amount of LGA per capita in general goes down. This is kind of, it's not as perfect as this graph kind of makes it look, but that's a general rule. As your tax base goes up, your LGA goes down. It's there so that poverty-poor communities can levy what they need for the services they need. It also, of course, addresses need, which is why some cities receive more per capita even though they have a stronger tax base. The biggest example, and everyone's going to point it out, so I might as well, is Minneapolis. Minneapolis has a population of 380,000, but everyone knows that during the day there's way more than that there through the offices to the University of Minnesota, through everything else. And at night you have Twins, Vikings, and whatnot. And the reason I point that out is because they have more overburden to protect and serve these people. However, you can say the same thing for all of our regional centers on a smaller basis. The same thing happens in Owatonna. The same thing happens in Marshville. As people come into Marshville during the day and they leave, they go to their smaller towns. So the program tries to do both things. That's why it's a complex formula. That's why we should take time to learn the formula and talk about the effects. And that's why the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities does not support phase one of this tax bill or this budget plan. We understand that this is going to be a long budget year. We understand that people want to do this and chip away at it. But we also want to see a comprehensive bill, a comprehensive agreement, not just taking bits by bits. Finally, I've heard people say, well, the cities can just, you know, the cities should have known that this was coming. I think in a year where we saw a representative who had been there for 30 years disappear, it's been a very different year and no one can tell the future. And I think that our cities did look at this and they said, how much did we get last year? What are we expected to get? We base our levies off of what we're expected to get. However, most of our cities have plans A, B, C, and D. If we lose this much, we're going to cut this. If we lose that much, we're going to do this. We're going to delay our roads again. We might change our fire department. All these have impacts. And it goes well beyond the property tax. If we cut $230 million of local aids and credits a year, you will see property tax increases, no doubt. But you're also going to see services cut. And these services cuts go beyond just free services that people want that are good. You're going to see roads not get fixed, which then leads to people going over potholes or the roads deteriorating, causing increased debt service in the future as we pay for our roads for bonding. And you're going to see people have, you know, quite frankly, I had it twice last year where my vehicle hit a pothole and had some damage and you had to go get it fixed. That's a $500 fee. I paid it because it wasn't fixed. You're going to see departments change from a public paid fire department to a volunteer fire department. Yeah. On call, thank you. And one of the things that occurs in some communities is you'll see an increase in your business insurance because the fire coverage is not as good. That occurs. So there are costs that go beyond just private or public costs and property taxes and fees levied by the cities. It will go into the private sector, and if that's the desire to get away from the equalization and go that fine. Let's have the discussion. But I just wanted to lay out some of the arguments for the program as we go on throughout this year and we have more discussion. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Peterson. Representative Garofalo to Mr. Peterson.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Peterson, I served in the tax committee last session, and correct my recollection is that you guys did not oppose phase one in 2010. Am I correct in that, or am I mistaken?
Representative Garofalo, Mr. Chairman, correct. And the reason that we had this is it's kind of a timing issue. Remember how this actually happened. The LGA cuts were first unallotted. The unallotments happened. We got what we got. They were then ruled that the unallotments were done in a fashion that wasn't, I don't want to call it illegal, but whatever the term people want to use for that, whatever it is. I don't want to antagonize with that because that's not the point.
Keep digging.
yeah, I know. but then at that point, you came back. We had set our levies. We had gotten our budgets. It would be like just giving us money after our budgets had been set, and what do we do with it? I mean, so our budgets were already done. You know, so we didn't object to it. It was so far down the line that, I mean, yes, we could have done it for some of the one-time monies and some of the one-time fundings, but we, you know, chose to be partners in this game. It was too late, so we just did.
Mr. Chairman? So, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Peterson, so Chapter 215 did not cut assistance to your member organizations, your member cities?
Chapter 215 did, but it had already been done. It's a difference of, right now, we know we are expecting one number, right? And this would lower it to a lower number. At that point, we were expecting the lower number. We got the lower number. And then the unallotment was ruled wrong. And it would have bounced back up without legislative approval.
Okay, so Mr. Chairman. Grapple. So Mr. Chairman, Mr. Peterson. So because the reduction in 215 was not as much as you had been reduced, in that situation it was okay. But in this situation, where we're not giving you an increase you were expecting, that's not okay. Is that correct?
Mr. Peterson?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Representative Garofalo, no. It is more about timing than it is about the numbers in this scenario here. It was about, it's like, I'm trying to think of a good example. knowing that you, if you were given $500, no, that's a bad example.
Well, Mr.
you know, Mr.
Mr. Peterson, that might be about what you right? get.
Yeah.
No, wouldn't you, Representative Graffle, you still have the floor, if I could just ask a quick question here to your point. Wouldn't you rather know earlier rather than later where you're at?
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, yes.
Representative Graffle.
Yeah. Just, you know, and Mr. Peterson, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you know, I was one of two members of the then minority to vote with the majority party for those cuts last year, right? So there's, with all this conversation, we can talk about this policy, but it seems like we're not understanding the severity of this situation yet. And I will just repeat my comments that I made in the tax committee back in 2010. Folks, this is nothing compared to what's coming. Okay, the local government aid formula is going to be unrecognizable. And that's a quote that I used and I said last year. We have a $6.2 billion deficit. Members of the minority, it's your choice whether you want to vote for this bill today or not. Y'all voted for it last year. Truth of the matter is I voted for it last year when I was in the minority. It doesn't mean, well, you did, but that's okay. So we can have this long, protracted conversation about it. But at some point, and my guess is it's going to be February 15th when Governor Dayton's budget comes forward, we're going to have a serious and sober conversation about it. But this... This is nothing compared to the choices we have to make. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Both Mr. Peterson and Representative Garofalo raised the same question in my mind in their comments, and as does the Chair, about, you know, would you rather know earlier than later? With the rush on this bill, you know, you get points for earlier. It's January 19th, I think. So that's early. What's missing is the total budget plan. And I'm wondering, can you tell the committee and the public, are you done with the cuts to local governments and to counties and to renters and to property taxpayers and to businesses with this bill? Or, as Representative Garofalo indicated, there'll be more cuts and more property tax increases later this session.
Well, thank you for the question, Representative Dabney. There's a lot of moving parts here, and what my intent is here is to make it so when we get the budget forecast from February, we're not in as deep as we will be if we do nothing. So I would certainly not say that there's, Representative Garofalo, I think, hit it right. I mean, we'll have to see, first of all, February 15th, we will give full hearings to the governor's proposals, and then this committee will have to make some very, very tough decisions. But I would certainly not say that there is no more coming. That there's more coming, to what extent, if this bill becoming, to what extent, if this bill becomes law, if the governor would sign this, there are actually some good things in here. There are some good things in here. Yes, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And you still have the floor, Representative Dabney.
Thanks.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Dabney, I just want to point out just a glaring factor that everyone's omitting. We are doing the exact same thing you guys did when you were in the majority. We took a huge problem, and we're trying to put it into manageable chunks. We're doing, so any description of this bill as what it does or what it doesn't do, It is literally exactly to what you guys did when you were in charge. And I think that that is a fair statement, which you look at the facts, is accurate. So I would emphasize that point. We are doing what you guys did. And I did not throw rocks at you guys when you did it. I voted for your bill as one of the two that did it. And I would hope that maybe you could be one of the two that would indulge us with that grace this time.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, I'm sorry to disappoint you, because I was thinking about this. Well, I was going to say in the shower this morning, but nobody wants that picture in their head. So, the earlier today.
Earlier today.
Yes, thank you. There's places I could go, and we just don't want that either. And what we've got is a partial response. And it was sparked. Representative Biskin said, we can't continue to do what we're doing. It isn't working. And we just left 8 years of the Pawlenty administration, who was never quite able to plan and anticipate. And instead, we kind of lurched from crisis to crisis. When he came into office, we had a $4 billion deficit. When he left office, we had a $6 billion deficit. And he was never willing to deal with the problem in front of him in a comprehensive, thoughtful way. He kept pushing it off and kicking the can down the road and not dealing with it. And I'd hoped that with the turnover in administrations, we'd have a different approach. But what I'm seeing out of the majority here is the same thing that Representative Biskins rightly said isn't working. Not a comprehensive plan, not a total package, but a piece, kicking things around, doing a little something, but no map, no plan, no direction, just swinging at a pitch and not knowing whether they're going to run the bases or not.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I am in the let's get out of here by noon caucus, just to be clear about that. But Representative Dabney, it is a fact. I served on the conference committee with Representative Wincheski, Representative Carlson, and the other members of the DFL majority. These are your cuts. You voted for them. This is your plan. How can you throw rocks at your plan? It's your bill.
Mr. Chair, can I get
involved? Mr. Chair, I'll cede the floor to somebody much more entertaining.
Okay, what we're going to do here is Representative Garofalo.
Yeah.
You have the floor.
I'm done.
Okay, Representative Gottwald.
Well, I'm in that same caucus, but I'll tell you what, the revisionist approaches that I'm hearing from the other side of the aisle right now are frankly puzzling. We had 4 years in which to enact long-term reforms, Representative Dabney and others, to change the path of state government. And to lay that at the feet of Tim Pawlenty once again, it smacks a little bit of, insanity. I cannot believe it. I mean, for 4 years, we have seen kicking the can down the road by a legislature run by people who are more interested in expanding and growing government than doing the responsible thing in light of our economy and other things. We are now facing an unprecedented budget deficit because of the lack of a plan, the lack of a solution. And the only solution we did here was major tax increases. That would have solved everything, supposedly. But so now we have this big pile, and we have, as Representative Garofalo pointed out, only seen the beginning of this. We have to solve it, and we can play the back and forth and who's to blame and all that, but the $6.2 billion is real and it's sitting right in front of us, and we are going to have to do some things that none of us are happy about doing to balance that budget. And the one thing I like about this bill is that it does start talking about permanent changes, things that aren't going to be 1 year and then next year we have to come back and do it again. We confuse the cities yet again by telling them they're going to get more, now they're going to get less. We have got to start making promises we can keep with money we have instead of making promises we can't keep with money we don't have, which is what we've been doing the last 4 years that I've been in the legislature. So there's plenty of blame to go around, but let's face reality, folks. The pile is huge. And as Representative Garofalo said, this is just the beginning.
Okay, what I'd like to do is, we've had a lot, basically everybody's on the list here. Who are you? I'm your Uncle Buck. I have an Uncle Buck.
Mr. Chair, my name is Patricia Nauman. I'm the Executive Director of Metro Cities.
Could you please spell your last name?
Nauman. It's N as in Nancy, A-U-M-A-N.
Oh, and your first name again, I'm sorry.
Patricia.
Patricia. Okay, here's what we're going to do. I've got a long list here, and we can have this debate, certainly. I believe you'd be the last testifier. We do have somebody here from Management and Budget, and we do have somebody here from Revenue. So if members have questions, if they do have questions for them, we can bring them down, certainly, to testify. I've got a whole bunch, so you're kind of on deck.
Okay,
because we have to have a little more fun here first. Okay, Representative Paymar.
Not looking to wait into that.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Paymar, Rukavina, Marcourt, Loeffler, Drazkowski, Erickson. Is there anybody else? And you, just so we don't have rules next to me, but if your name's on the list, you can pass. It's allowed. Representative Paymar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief, I think. I just to respond to Representative Garofalo, not everybody supported that bill last year. And in fact, I see in just around this table, Representative Rukavina, Representative Lesh, Representative Paymar, myself, did not vote for it. And for a number of different reasons. And I think you're correct, however, that we're probably going to see more cuts down the road, LGA, county aid. But I want to respond to what Representative Gottwald is saying, because when I think of a responsible way of getting out of this budget crisis, as I have for the last 8 years, a responsible way is a balanced approach. And we've been trying to say that for the last 8 years. And it's got, you know, Representative Erickson is chuckling here, but I guess some people in this state feel that a responsible way to deal with this budget deficit is cuts, is government reform that we've seen some of. And Representative Gottwald, do you mind?
Members, please, when the member's talking, let's listen to what the member has to say. Representative Paymar, you have the floor, sir.
Okay, thank you very much. You know, I think back to a very bad vote that I took. Some of you were here back in 1999 and 2000. And we changed the income tax rate. And I'll forever regret that vote. At that point, we were swimming, I think, I can't remember, we kept talking about boatloads of money, surplus after surplus after surplus. So it seemed like a good thing to do at the time. I remember, you know, listening to Representative Chair Abrams at the time saying, you know, this was a smart approach, and several of us voted for that. Many of us voted for it. The majority of the legislature voted for it. It was the wrong thing to do. I always assumed during the last 8 years that we would correct that mistake. And so when I think about responsibility and a balanced approach, I'm saying that we're all in this together. Now, some of you around this table, you know, get, I think, the, you know, there's a certain fashionability, you know, to kick Minneapolis and St. Paul and the Iron Range for getting LGA. But the fact of the matter is we have some real needs in our cities. They're there, and they're going to take their cuts. Our mayor and city council, there's a 0% tax levy increase for 2011. The people in my district are seeing their property taxes rise to unbelievable levels. They're being moved out of their homes. Now, you can say, cut more, cut more, cut more. But I think, as Mr. Peterson said, the result of that is that the quality of life in our city starts to diminish. So I know that we're going to have this conversation again, but and I'm trying to be respectful of the majority here, but I just want to say that there are different approaches. And I don't agree with everything that Governor Dayton is proposing, but I think if you all would meet us in the middle, we might be able to figure a way out of this crisis. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Paymar. Representative Rukavina.
Well, when I was in the shower this morning, let me start off a different way. Representative Garofalo, I didn't vote for that bill, as Representative Paymar said. Myself, and I just want to plead with you too, that we are in a terrible mess. I agree with you, Potso. It's a mess, and I, you know, don't envy the job that you have to do in the majority to balance our budget. But Representative Gottlieb, It's not an unprecedented budget deficit. Representative Paymar touched on it a little bit. It was two actions when the Republicans controlled the House, and I think you might have been on the tax committee then. We cut income tax in 99. I voted no. We cut it in 2000. I voted for the conference committee report because Representative Abrams protected some Taconite money and did it out of loyalty, but I said it was going to cause a mess. And, you know, Governor Pawlenty started his term off with a 4.3, I believe, or maybe it was a little more, deficit, a billion-dollar deficit, and we ended up, now that he's gone, with $6.2 billion. So I think we've had deficits almost every year but 2007, and maybe up there one other year. And we've just been stealing every pot of money and not facing it. We're just as guilty as you, and now we have to face reality. But one thing we didn't do, and I want to clear this up here, Representative Garofalo, because I don't think, and correct me if I'm wrong, staff or Representative Rucheski, but when we sent an early bill to the governor, it was a cut bill that he basically worked out with Representative Rucheski. We didn't antagonize him as much as I love to be a burr under the saddle with him. He signed that bill, and what you're doing here is sending a bill out that I don't think Governor Dayton is going to sign. It's just antagonizing until you start working with him, because we cannot solve this problem. I don't care. We cannot solve it with just cuts. There's no way you can do that. And some of your new members are going to be looking at some of these runs later on when you're right, when the rubber's really going to hit the road. And we're going to have to reach an agreement. So I guess my only question to you is, why send out an early bill that to me is just probably going to get vetoed, and you're just going to antagonize somebody that you've got to work with the rest of them?
Well, I'll go to Representative Grofflater in a second, but Representative Rukavina, a couple things. It's not my intent to agonize, or it is my intent to agonize, not antagonize. Yes. My door is open to the governor's office. We're, you know, we've talked to the governor's office. We'll continue to talk to the governor's office as much as they want to talk, as much as we want to talk, and it goes both ways. He's been very open to me. And I do appreciate that, but there are some good things in here. There's some federal conformity issues. There's some different things that I, from what I understand, the governor wants. And so it's my goal to make the February forecast numbers look better. That's what I want to do, because it's a step, it's a start, and we'll be talking to the governor's office more. And, okay, Representative.
Well, oh, to that point,
and then to Representative Garofalo.
You can refresh my memory, but did we send an early conformity bill, too, that you worked out with him, and then the early cut bill, and it was kind of worked out, or am I getting Iron Age Alzheimer's, or I'm forgetting everything but the grudges here?
Representative Lanchesky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Rukavina, of course, is kidding, because he's exactly right, and he knows that that's how it played out. You know, there has been some emotion in the room right now, but there is some revision going on. I mean, we mostly had Governor Pawlenty sign our tax bills. There was only a couple he vetoed. He signed many, many. And that was in great part because we chose to send conformity alone with an agreement before we sent it. We actually started by sending $300 million in cuts that we pre-agreed to. And, you know, in the end, we did show our different values with some revenue, and that was vetoed. But I think in the last year, we passed six tax bills that were signed by the governor. So people kind of forget all the things people do come to agreement on. And I would urge all of us to try a little harder to work a little more together, because there is common ground. Governors are very powerful, as we all know, and in fact, you know, we mostly, Representative Garofalo, we mostly had to do what the governor wanted. That's how it works. You know, he wasn't going to let us raise any revenue, and he didn't let us. And so we mostly passed, and the votes will show that it is the Democrats who cut state government overwhelmingly. And Representative Garofalo, you did vote for that, but if you get the vote totals out, it was mostly the majority who took the votes to cut government all over the place, and the governor signed the bills. So, you know, Minnesotans elected one party to the majority and another party to the governor's office, and everyone is going to have to work together. And I think we just all do well to remember that, you know, strident positions won't serve us well in the end.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Representative Lanchesky, Representative Rukavina, I did not forget anything, okay? When the bill left the House floor, it was not an assignable format for the governor. In the conference committee, and I'll give you a specific example, the $25 million increase on mutual fund investors, or the securities fee it was called. I mean, the governor stated pretty clearly it was unacceptable. At that point, the governor got involved, put the bill into a format that he could sign, and it was signed into law. But Representative Rukavina, to say that when that bill left the House floor at this stage in the process in 2010, no, that's just not accurate.
Mr. Chair, you
Representative Rukavina.
I must have been speaking Italian to you. I said we never sent an early bill.
Tax bill.
You're talking about the omnibus bill at the end, and yes, there were differences. But I'm talking early on. It's January, what, did you say 19th today? Yes.
Okay. I understand that.
And so that was what I was pointing
at. Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, this is the Winkler plan. We heard Representative Winkler on the House floor. He wanted us to move forward. This is the Winkler plan. That's what I'm going to call this. That's what we're moving forward on.
Fine. So, thank you.
I'd appreciate if everyone would call it the Winkler plan, because it's actually, I've actually got my name on it with all my friends. So, yeah. Further discussion on the Winkler plan. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I think we all realize that balancing this budget is going to be tough, tough work. And in fact, you know, in the last 2 years, we basically solved the $6 billion deficit with a 2-2-2, two from cuts, two from shifts, and two from federal government, that generally. And so, you know, as Representative Lincheski said, we had to make, you know, we've done $2 billion in cuts. And there are several around this table who were here during those 2 years that never voted for those cuts. And so we know it's tough, and everyone's going to have to make cuts. But the plan we're looking at today is not the plan we passed last year. When you're talking about Chapter 215, that was what we were calling the small cuts bill, if you remember. It came after the unallotments. And in that bill, I think we had about $75 million in permanent cuts that went into the future. This will cut $271 million into the future. And what this bill does in the next 3 years, we'll have $600 million of increased property taxes. What we passed last year did not do that. There's a huge difference between temporary and permanent. I could give you many, many examples. There's differences. And so what this is long-term property tax increases. And, you know, looking at what kind of, my big question, I guess, on this is the timing of it. You know, why right out of the chute, the very first thing we do, you know, before we look at any redesign efforts that I've been a strong supporter and others around this table, before we looked at further efficiencies, before we looked at some of those zero budget principles, you know, looking at priorities, before we go out and listen to the public some more, before we would do those things that I think should be part of an overall budget mix here, we come out right out of the chute and we're going to raise property taxes. We're going to raise property taxes on those folks who in the last 8 years have had an 85% increase. Our seniors on fixed incomes, our young families, our farmers, our businesses. I was just calculating, businesses since 2002 have seen their property taxes go up almost $800 million. Businesses. And in the next 3 years, the Revenue Department anticipates a $600 million property tax increase with this. And not including the statewide tax, that will place about a $130 million property tax increase on businesses. On those job creators that we've been talking about, this plan will place an additional burden of $130 million in the next 3 years on businesses. On just businesses. Much larger on homeowners. And so the timing is, why would you do this? And what Representative Daphne was saying is, you know, I think we realize there's going to be these cuts here. And yet, you know, I'm thinking you've got this phase that there's probably going to be more cuts in this area. And another area we haven't talked about yet is the renter's credit reduction. That was also temporary last year, now being made permanent. But that's about $53 million a year. Now, who are those folks that get that renter's property credit? And I'm not counting that as part of the $600 million property tax increase. And yet in state law, they talk about implicit property tax, and you know this is a property tax. But 28% of all of those renters are seniors or those with disabilities. And they're going to see a reduction on the average. First of all, about 6% of these renters, about 19,000, are going to be completely wiped off the chart. And there will be about an average of $170 of increases in their property taxes or a decrease in that refund. Now, 28% are seniors of those on fixed incomes. 12 of the 87 counties, 50% or more of those renters are seniors or those with disability, 12. And all 12 are out in rural Minnesota. So that has a huge, huge impact. And I guess, like I said, we're going to have to make cuts. But the one question I guess I would have for the chair is kind of the timing of this. Why, before we kind of do all the other things we really should do, before we decide to place an increased burden on our seniors and our businesses and our farmers and our young families, and why would we do this first without looking at efficiencies? I mean, I don't think there's a time crunch here. You know, you talk to the cities, and, you know, I think this sends a clear message, if they haven't received it already, Mr. Chair, that there's going to be some cuts. So, you know, even if they didn't do that in the levy process, I think they're going to look at this, oh, we better not, you know, it's early in the year. They've got the message. So why now? I mean, why would you do this first before, you know, I think there's some reform, some redesign ideas, some efficiency ideas. I like the idea of performance budgeting, looking at outcomes and priorities. You know, instead of sitting and talk about the 10% we have to cut, let's talk about the 90% we can spend money on and make sure it's on the right priorities in the most efficient way. We should do that first. I mean, we have till May. So, I guess, Mr. Chair, I mean, why are we going to immediately out of the gate place this heavy burden? I mean, it's just the same old, where we have just, we've balanced the books, state books, on the backs of property taxpayers. And local government aid doesn't go to City Hall. It goes to the senior citizen on fixed income to keep property taxes low so they can stay in their house. It goes to the young family in the business so they can, when they're after a 6-inch snowstorm, which we haven't had any at all, I don't think, yet this year, but we just might, they can get to work on time, or there's parks and that. This money doesn't go to buildings. It goes to people, and I think we lose that connection. So I don't see why we're at this point right now. And with all this permanent thing, I mean, we haven't even, again, I'll go back, discuss this in property tax division. I think there's so much to this bill that we need to really understand. But so, that I mean, I just think the timing is bad. We're going to have to end up making tough cuts. I don't know if these are the ones, but I think this is way, way ahead of the game.
Okay, thank you very much, Representative Marquardt. What we're going to do is I have the list, and I'll keep the list for our 6:30 to midnight meeting. I'll start with Loeffler, Druskowski, Erickson, Kiffmeyer, Runbeck. I do wish to, however, have Ms. Nauman. She said she's got about a 2-minute presentation. I want to hear from her, and then members will be back here at 6:30, room 200, this room. So leave your stuff. Well, we can't leave it here. We'll have to clean up. So stuff you want to save, please put in your save folder, and we'll go from there. Ms. Nauman, welcome to the Tax Committee. Please present, state your name and who you represent for the record, and provide your testimony.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Again, my name is Patricia Nauman, and I'm the Executive Director of Metro Cities. I will be very brief. I'll try to keep this to 1 minute, actually. I know you're short on time. We know that you have very difficult challenges ahead of you, and I just want to say that cities want to be your partner in this and not just sort of subject to all the cuts. We want to have a voice, and we want to be partners. Metro Cities, just so you know, for those of you who are not aware, our organization represents cities across the metropolitan area in the 7-county region. About half of our cities get some LGA, and about half do not. But the consensus of our member cities is that LGA plays a very critical role for cities in the region overall. And so our organization supports this important program for cities. Primary reason is that all cities, the region is much stronger when all cities have the ability to provide basic services and quality infrastructure. The people that this impacts are the residents and the businesses in the region. And as we look to, as a state, trying to create jobs and to help our state and region grow and prosper, we believe that LGA plays a very critical role in making sure that our residents and businesses have that quality infrastructure, have the basic services in place so that businesses want to come here. We've heard 1,000 times it's not the weather, that's not why people come to Minnesota. It's because of the quality of life and the quality infrastructure and the quality services that the state provides and the region. I also just want to point out that we do recognize you have very difficult challenges. I don't envy any of your position. But as cities, as over the last 7 years, metropolitan cities have lost about half of their aids and credits already. We've suffered a 50% loss. We believe that this is very disproportionate to what other state program areas have seen in terms of budget reductions, and we would ask that you keep that in mind as you are looking comprehensively at what you need to do with the state budget overall, and just would appreciate that you would keep these concerns in mind. And again, we want to be your partner. We want to help work on issues with you, and I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Nauman. With that being said, again, 6:30 to accommodate the DFL with their caucus, room 200 right here. Tomorrow morning, I think it'll be real cozy. I think it's room 300 or 300 north. Seriously, it's been done before. It's been done before. There is president. Good government all the time. We are in recess until 6:30, room 200. We will reconvene the tax meeting and members. Just a little outline for a schedule here. We have the room till midnight. House rules say no meetings past midnight unless there's a vote to, well, I guess that's on the floor to continue. The plan then will be coming in tomorrow morning at 7, go through 9, and then vote about 5 minutes to 9. Or if we can just get this thing out of here now, we'd be done and we would not have any meeting tomorrow. So we would cancel the tax committee meeting for tomorrow. We start up again next Tuesday. So with that, we will start with Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I appreciate you carrying me over from this morning's discussion. You might remember we kind of ended talking about Representative Marquardt had brought issues about timing brought up, and I felt like I needed to say some things about the process. And I'm kind of one of those good government people, but I know that it's going to be tough. No matter who is in charge, no matter who is in the corner office of the White Building and who's in charge in this building, this is tough, tough work, and it's going to strain the patience of all of us and the people that we serve. But that said, I think we need to think about how we do it so that in the end, no matter how the cuts fall, we all feel like we did it in a way that our citizens are proud of the process. And I meet a lot with school groups. I think we all do. And I always tell them that that the Democratic process says there's 202 people involved in this. 201 are legislators, and one's a governor. And we're entrusted to make tough, difficult decisions. And we're not all brilliant. But we do our best to understand what's before us. And that it's mostly people of goodwill pouring over oftentimes boring reports, complicated computer printouts, and no offense to the frequent testifiers in this committee, but oftentimes boring testimony. And in spite of it all, we really work hard to try and understand what the impact is on the people that we serve and to welcome their input and their feedback on what's happening. And I just want to, as much as possible in this tough year, for us to honor that, and in terms of having a fair, thoughtful, and transparent process. And this bill has made me dismayed, and I just wouldn't feel comfortable with myself if I didn't say that, because it hasn't welcomed the ideas or the reactions of the public. I believe you were sincere, Mr. Chair, when you said you wanted to hear from the real people, and that you'd take first the real people who had to drive a long way, and that after that you might even consider the real people who live within 50 miles of the Capitol. And real people have real jobs and aren't paying attention breathlessly to everything that we do, and I don't think they had a chance to be here. But they showed up at the Truth and Taxation hearings, and they very definitely were willing and able and wanted to share their reactions to what the impact of increased property taxes were on their life in my city, in my county. And I think they would have showed up here with enough time and attention. And if we'd given them a chance to find out about it in the press and other ways and come here. And last year we heard really compelling testimony about the property tax refund. I represent a ton of renters, and that's very important to them. And it was amazing how many people said this is how they pay for their kids back to school clothes and school supplies, because that's when they get the check. And they're counting on that. For a lot of seniors, that's how they're paying for saving up their money to help pay for the heating thing. And I just really would like to hear those voices before we go on. And I think we ought to honor our committee structure. I think I'm disappointed that the Property Tax Division didn't get to really understand what the what this is. And I also want to hear from our local governments, not just their lobbyists, but what does this mean long term? Because if I get a sudden car repair that's $600, I may have to cut back on things for a while over the next 6 months or adjust my budget to deal with it. But I can manage that in a different way than if my landlord sends me an increase of $250 a month in my rent, and that's forever as long as I stay there. I mean, that takes a whole different sort of looking at what you've got to offer and how you can adjust. And I think we should deal with that. And the last thing is that I really do believe we need to understand fully what the implications are of what we're doing and who we're benefiting and who we're not. And I still don't understand the business conformity, really, who that's benefiting and who it isn't. I don't know how to tell someone who was on Main Street in my area what's doing that. And so I just really hope that as we go forward in this tough year, that we will have more time to do the people's work and hear from the people and the people who are impacted, because I can't explain when I looked at the printouts why, you know, some are going up and or some are, you know, have a huge increases and or decreases in the market value and LGA, and some have almost no impact. And we haven't heard from our staff on sort of how that's worked out. And so I just hope that we don't treat this as a game. We realize that this is going to have real consequences on people's lives. And the more that we know what it is, the more comfortable I will feel saying, yeah, we had to make tough choices, and these are the ones we made, and then I'll feel like I'll be able to explain it to the people impacted. So I can invite them to the next hearing or explain it in my town meeting when they ask, so what did this do? But this is a major change in policy, and I just wanted to say I hope in future hearings we get to hear from some of those real people, and we get to hear from some of the city council members and elected officials and the county commissioners who are going to have to deal with whatever we hand off to them. And so it's just an editorial, but I do really think we ought to step up in a way whenever we can. And you may not have written the script for this particular dance. It may have come from your leadership. We understand how that works. But I just hope whenever we can, we try and do it in a way that has a fuller discussion and a fuller understanding. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Before we go on to the next member here, is there anyone in the audience that would wish to testify against the bill? Anyone else? I mean, this is an open public meeting posted. Okay. Representative Drazkowski, Erickson, Kiffmeyer, Runbeck, Crawford. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, we all spent about the last 9 months very close to our constituents, and they are very aware of the direction government has been heading. We've got a $14 trillion debt in the federal government. I just looked the other day in bonding debt in the state of Minnesota. We've got a $5.5 billion bonding debt for general obligation bonds. We've got, as we see here, an appetite for government that is $6.2 billion greater than the amount of money that the people can afford. This bill, and thank you, Representative Davids, for bringing it forward, does exactly what the people told me we need to be doing when we get back here to St. Paul, and that is not increasing the size and scope of government. Thankfully, Representative Davids, your bill does exactly that. It stops a projected increase that is going to increase above the amount state government spent last year. This is the first step that everybody I talk to at the door expects our people, their legislators, to begin with as we begin our work here in St. Paul. And so this is not a difficult decision for me, and I would not expect that it is for most people around the table. All we're doing is telling government, no, you are not going to increase your spending above the amount we had last year. This is the first step. Minnesotans know we need to go steps beyond this, but let's get the job done.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I wanted to comment when the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities was at the table, because the handout they provided us, this graph, tells us so directly that what we need in Minnesota is more commercial and industrial, whether it's Browns Valley or it's Brainerd or it's Crystal or it's Minneapolis. It's so evident here that we have the inequity because we have a low tax base, and so it needs to be a concerted effort on the part of all of us to make sure we have policy that creates, that allows the private sector to create more jobs and for business and industry to locate in our small and large cities so that we have that increased tax base. Then we wouldn't be having these discussions about LGA.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this was a few hours ago, and we had our, actually this morning we had the tax committee meeting, and there was a comment made at that time about Governor Pawlenty. You know, he came in on a $4.2 billion deficit scenario and that he's leaving on a 6.2. Well, let's remember that when he came in, it was right after 9/11 dot-com crash, and you know, the circumstances were very unique, absolutely unique at that time. And then about the time things were climbing out, we had the 2007-8-9 recession. So I think to put all this blame on Governor Pawlenty, I think he's helped preserve our AAA bond rating, save local governments a lot of money because of that. And so there's been a lot of good things that has been benefited by that. So I just thought that was an important point to make. The other thing is that I've always found that what will happen is you get this surplus year or the times are good and then the exuberance. And it's one thing to spend your surplus when you have it, such as in a month you might have a windfall or a surplus or times are good. But if you make commitments month after month after month based upon those kind of good times situations, and then you make over promises and over commitments, and you bind future legislatures going forward into commitments of spending. We all know that the cycles are such that they eventually go down again. I mean, look back historically, they never just stay up, but it seems like it's always a challenge. So part of this is structural. Commitments made and things pushed off to the next biennium instead of doing what our Constitution, I believe, really calls for in talking about a balance, is that not a fake balance, but a true balance. But you do the best that you can in any one time, but I think it's our 87th term that we have here to really look at this from a structural point of view and not just keep pushing it off. And it's a hard thing. Whoever gets to be in that situation, who has to really deal with it in a real sort of structural way, that's a little bit harder, but by far better now. And I think there's a lot of room for reform within that. So I think that what we've got to deal with here, I was here for those 2 years. We did lots and lots of talking about all this. We had lots and lots of testimony, lots of issues. And as I went in my campaign as well, this was no surprise at all to any city governments or local governments or anybody else. And then the people themselves, you know, they're cutting back. They're getting their salaries cut. They're having their family budgets ratcheted back. They're having to prioritize what's essential. I mean, they're doing this. And they want us in government to do the same thing. We take care of essentials, that which is truly needy, and we want to focus and make sure that we have that genuine care for what's there. But I think there's a lot of things in here that we can do differently and still take care of those essentials. So I know that I listen to lots of that. I think that as we've gone through this, that I'm ready to take it on and make some of those tough decisions, and I think we are, many of us are ready to do that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for bringing the bill forward.
Thank you, Representative Kiffmeyer. Representative Runbeck, Crawford, and Knuth. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. I want to suggest a different way to think about what we're doing in this LGA reduction portion. I mean, I think our challenge, and really in all the spending votes we'll be taking, is that if we are able to shift from lower value programs to higher value programs across state government, we're going to be able to afford to do more for those programs that are higher value. And I would suggest that LGA as much as everybody loves it, is not a very high-value program. It is very discretionary spending. It has not worked to lower tax, property tax contributions and spending. So it is a chance in my mind to say we're shifting dollars here because in the end we're going to be able to have more money put into K through 12. We're going to be able to save that important program from cuts, from you know, the kind of pain that, that we know that they feel. And I think that this is the right place to start. You know, the discretionary spending is what a lot of what LGA has turned into. Thanks.
Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We heard a lot of history today, and I was very pleased to hear that. But I can tell you we've heard also that we'd like to hear from the counties and the cities. I can tell you three weeks ago tonight, I was a county official, and we set the final levy. And I can tell you that I represent three counties, 15 people. And to a person, they say, fix the problem. That's why we sent you here. That's why I eventually decided to run. And the counties, our county, I know for sure, they are expecting us to give them less aid in 2011. I know that because I've talked to them, and some of them say, well, we won't be getting any aid at all. So if I was to talk to them tonight and say that the aid that we're going to get in 2011 is the same that you're going to get in 2010, I think they would be disappointed. Yes, they want a certain amount of aid, but they are ready to have the problem solved, and they're eager to do that. So I support the bill, and I think we can do more, and I think we need to do more with less resources. Thank you.
Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm a new member of your committee, so I'm still learning to read some of these things. So I wanted to read through the runs just to make sure I've got it right. I'm going to use one of my city, and maybe Ms. Dalton could, I might have it right, but she might be able to, if I'm getting it wrong, just so you're sure. And I picked Fridley just because I was at Fridley last night visiting with their school board, and they said that, I can't remember if it's the city of Fridley or the school district of Fridley, has the seventh highest property tax burden in the metro area, so that's something to be concerned about. So if I'm reading it right, it's on page number one, if members want to follow along, just so I'm getting this right. The first column is the LGA that was certified for 2011, so what current law is. And so that's $1.9 million approximately. And then the next column is $507,000 estimated market value homestead credit. And so those two combined, total combined aids and credits is $2.4 million to the city of Fridley, which is a good chunk of money, but Fridley has, you know, it's got things it has to be dealing with. So, you know, I guess I think that's understandable. So the next one is what this bill, House File 129, is that what it is? Yeah. It would make it, it would make that LGA $1.1 million. So essentially it would be reducing the LGA by about $500,000. Am I reading that correctly?
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it would decrease LGA by about, I'm sorry, now I've lost my thing. It's about
600.
Six and a half.
Okay.
$650,000.
Okay. And then the market value homestead credit is would be reduced, or would be $105,000 from $506,000. So it would be reducing market value homestead credit by about $400,000.
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, that would be correct. And the total reduction in aids and credits is the $1.1 million okay. That's in the last.
So I'm just, Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm getting that now. And I just want to make the point, and the thing I don't think is shown on this chart is that we're reducing state aids and credits to one of my cities by almost half. according to this run from current law. And that's something I'm pretty concerned about in a city that's already dealing with pretty high property taxes in terms of being in the metro area, and a school district that's really doing a lot of great things, and they're, you know, having to go up for a levy in the next year, and we continue this trend and making sure we can keep those schools the way they are. It's going to be really hard to pass the levies in that city, and so I just want to make sure members are clear, and hopefully you'll look at your cities on this, and I think just dividing that last number by that third number, you get the percentage decrease in local aids and credits, and for me, in one of my cities, it's almost half, and that's a pretty big problem, and you know, one I think we need to keep looking at in this committee and be very aware of, because I know that a 50% reduction almost in state aids and credits is going to get translated into some property tax increase. I'm not sure exactly the amount, but I would be surprised if it didn't get translated into any. So I just thank you, Ms. Dalton, for helping me talk through that and getting my math right. And maybe it would be useful to have another line on our runs saying, you know, the percentage decrease or increase, just so we have a better sense as a committee about the impacts on our cities and counties.
Okay, Representative Hortman, Lincheski, and Biskins. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm new to this committee, too, and I have a similar question about how to determine the impact on my local community. And in terms of what we're doing with the regressivity or the progressivity of the tax code, you know, just in the first couple days of the committee, I think it was Ms. Dalton who was going through the property tax section, or maybe it was Ms. Schill. And what I remember seeing was that in the property tax area, the actual burden on the first quintile of income is the highest, and the burden on the top income is the lowest. And then I look at the fact that that's reduced somewhat by the property tax refund program that makes it a little bit less burdensome on the first quintile of income, but still, there's still more than twice as much burden on the first quintile of income as the highest quintile of income for the property tax. And then I look at House File 29, and I want to understand this, because what I thought I heard in the earlier presentation on property taxes was, for every dollar we cut of LGA, that translates into a 66-cent tax property tax increase. So to try to determine the impact on my communities, I'm looking at the county aid for Anoka County and the county aid for Hennepin County, and I've got $4.1 million I lose in Anoka County, $20.9 million I lose in Hennepin County. So if I multiply that by 0.66, and then I look at what the city of Brooklyn Park is losing, they're losing $168,000, and I multiply that by 0.66. If I vote yes for this bill, then it looks like what I'm voting for is $16.6 million in increased property taxes for my residents, and I just want to understand if that's... A yes vote on House File 129 is taking, you know, five components of the Obama health care reform, and then also increasing property taxes on my homeowners in my district by $16.6 million. Is that, and which one of the House research staffers is the property tax expert I should be asking? Is that Ms. Schill or Ms. Dalton?
Ms. Dalton, why don't you just join us for a while here? The list is getting longer.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for pay 2011, there is no chance of passing these aid cuts on as levy increases in pay 11, because they have already been set, those levies. There are no levy limits in pay 2012. What local governments choose to levy back in terms of lost aid from this year, next year, is a problematic issue. We don't have a definitive answer for that. In the past, based on academic and historical information we have on levy behavior in the state, and some academic journal articles looking at what happens when general purpose aids to local governments are cut on the margin, the group that makes assumptions on how we model this have come up with an assumption that two-thirds of an aid cut gets passed on as a levy increase. Does that mean that your city's levy will go up by two-thirds of its aid cut? I wouldn't make that claim. Our percentage is a statewide percentage. And as I said, it's based on some historical information we have on behavior in the past, and it's based on some academic research that has been done in the past, but we don't have a definitive number. However, for modeling purposes, we've got to model something. And so this is a number that is agreed upon, that has been agreed upon in the past between nonpartisan Senate, House, and revenue staff. We have a group that's been meeting for about 20 years, and we sit down and look at past experience and past data, how we've made projections in the past and how well they have panned out in actual levies, and then use that information to make assumptions for future. The last year that we actually have some experience with was pay 2009, and it turned out that statewide, at least, the two-thirds levy back assumption seemed to make sense and was borne out by what actually happened.
Representative Hartman?
Well, Mr. Chair, the other question I have is on the regressivity issue. I don't know if on the typical tax bill you find out how progressive or regressive it is. I know when we learned kind of on the overview of income taxes and property taxes and sales taxes, we kind of learned where they hit people. Do we have any analysis on this bill of whether it's hitting poorer Minnesotans and middle-income Minnesotans harder than it's hitting the wealthy?
Ms. Schell?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hartman, we obtained the information on the property tax burden in the presentation that we did earlier. That is actually calendar year 06. So that is historic information derived from Department of Revenue. I can safely say that we cannot obtain that kind of information in this quick, short amount of time. And in fact, we go by historical information. So even if we updated this, it would probably be maybe a two-year update at most. The next tax incidence study is due out in March of this year. And so that would be the closest that we could even come. And we obviously March is a ways off from right now.
Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then my final point on the bill would be, you know, as we're deciding how to recover from the recession here in Minnesota and how to deal with the effects, we have to decide which Minnesotans we're going to burden and in what proportion with the cuts that we make. And I think doing this bill in isolation, cutting aids and credits, specifically directly cutting the property tax refund, is about the most regressive, you know, first shot over the bow that we can take in solving the budget problem. And I think, you know, it's nobody's fault we're in a recession. And the only way we're going to get out of the recession is if everybody is a part of the solution. And what I see in this bill is something that's making it harder for the people who have the least resources to deal with the problem. I understand other components that are moving through the legislature are going to increase, they're going to cut assistance to our higher education institutions, and I know from serving on the higher ed committee that just translates into a tuition increase. And I think it would be better for us as a legislature to be looking at the big picture and saying, where does everybody shake out and is everybody equally burdened?
Thank you, Representative Hartman. Representative Lincheski.
Chair, and you know, I just turned around and asked nonpartisan staff, Mr. Chair, if we walked through, because I didn't think we did, how to read runs as part of the kind of the orientation the first couple days, and they didn't think we did. Did we? We did not. Okay.
And I do think it's important for members, either new members to the legislature or new to the committee, that, you know, this is complicated stuff. And if you're not looking at your cities right now, boy, you should be. You should absolutely know what you're voting on here. And if I can take a minute, I wanted to follow up with Ms. Dalton, kind of the Representative Knuth example, and that was page one of the 2011 run. So I don't know if folks, everybody was comfortable with them, you don't care. But if you're not, you should turn to page one of the 2011 run. And Representative Knuth walked through her district, which was Fridley. And I'd just like to encourage you to look at mine. And that's just further down the page, and my community, Bloomington, is receiving no cuts. And I thought I would look at Representative Crawford because he spoke about the need to cut, and he's getting cut pretty healthy. And so then I looked at Representative Davids, and he's getting cut pretty hefty too. And I think it goes to the Hortman point. There really is a concern here because, we get you have to cut because we did it too. I mean, I just have to say, when I listened to Representative Kiffmeyer a little while ago, remember, we did all cut a couple billion over here, and I can show you the votes, but mostly you didn't join us. So we did cut.
And if anybody wants to know, I've got House File 1 from the special session right here, the one that was voted on that got us out last special session. So if anyone wants to refer to it, it's right here. Representative Lencheski.
And Mr. Chair, in that, and I appreciate that, so, nobody's afraid to cut around here. It's just how much and who. Are you making the tax system more progressive, regressive? Representative Biskins and I share a common trait in this legislature. We're the only two legislators in the legislature who has introduced bills to solve the deficit 100% with cuts. Sure, it can be done. Sign on our bills. You can also do it with revenue. You can do it with a little revenue. You can do it with a lot of revenue. There's all different ways. But I think what really, we all come at this from different angles. We need to look at kind of what's going on here. And I guess what I'd say is, I really am curious, Representative Davids, why, you and your caucus chose to cut this way. Let's say you have a target. You want to cut X amount of LGA. Historically, and we got Governor Plenty, Governor Plenty and I and the majority then agreed on levy plus aid. And you're doing it along the formula. And I think, we're seeing some of the impacts here. Some of the wealthiest cities do the best. And some of the poorest are doing the worst. And I just like the insight. I have, looked at the next, both of the two-year runs are different. So, in fact, some members who may be getting cut a lot now are getting cut less later. And sometimes it's the converse. So I really think members should be looking at these runs. And that is, kind of the concern, or one of the concerns I have is, when the runs don't become public in time for everyone to get through them and see them and even understand them, people should just go into this with their eyes wide open. And as one who actually did vote for permanentizing the governor's unallotments, I'm one of six Democrats who did. We have to cut. But I do want to say we have to understand what choices are being preferred in this bill, not later, this bill. And there's a clear choice to choose formula-driven cuts versus levy plus aid. And I think we should understand why, your majority believes that's the better strategy. And then the other thing is, we came into committee and conformity got added at 10:30 or something. And so, in this bill, the aids to cities and counties and getting rid of, the political checkoff or refund and the renter's credit is buying Section 179. So that's a definite policy choice. We're going to cut more from cities to do more conformity. And if you could just share with us, because we understand how this works. You have the votes, you're going to pass it. We're not happy about it. But what's the value here in choosing to give more relief to those who are better off? And will you make up for it later in trying the kind of concept of everyone's going to chip in to solve the deficit? We tried really hard to try to protect the most vulnerable people in the property tax system and sort of, really kind of direct relief to those who need it most. And this is the converse is how I'm reading it. And maybe you can just help us think through this.
Could you repeat the question?
Yes. Why are you using the formula to cut instead of levy plus aid?
Well, the way I'm looking at this is we have the, 129 as amended before us. As we move forward, this would put us back basically to where we're in 2011. As we move forward, we will be hearing from the Property Tax Division and others as to what happens to the formulas. So I'm not putting as much stock into these runs right here because I'm looking more at the dollars. These are the dollars. You have as many dollars in there as you did last year, and then the Property Tax Division over time will be able to hopefully develop a formula and hear all input from everyone. So I'm not getting hung up on Racine, Minnesota has this and Sabika has this, because I think in all reality the Property Tax Committee will do their work and come back with their proposals, and I think that's a debate for that time. So I'm looking more at the total numbers. This was voted on, this was passed, this is the law currently, and what we're doing is we're extending it. And, you know, we're being in a session here. We need to make a start at this, take a stab at this. I can't say stab. Make an effort to reconcile some of these issues. And that's where we're headed. Representative Bisgins. Representative Luchesky, you still have the floor. I'm sorry.
I apologize. Mr. Chair, I hear that. And, I get it because you and I have been in the same spot here. So, But given that, that's the bill, House Bill 1, yes, and that was temporary. And that's a key difference here. Do you want it temporary or permanent? It's a value when it's permanent. It's forever. This is the right way. It's permanent, unless Representative Runbeck and her committee can get you to change that. Would you be open to instead a two-year bill? Why permanentize it if this isn't even the values yet that you are wanting to put into law?
Representative Luchesky, you know how this place works. We've got a long ways to go. This is a bill that gets it'll pass out tonight. Then it goes to Ways and Means, and the Senate does their thing. It goes, you know how big a bill becomes a law. So we got a long ways to go. And Representative Loeffler was saying we need more time. We got a lot of. We're going to have some time here. The debate will continue, and we will be bringing real people in from even Minneapolis to debate this. President Luchesky.
Can you just answer the other part of the question about why choose to use cuts to do conformity? Why use, put Section 179 ahead of aids and credits? Sir?
Well, one thing is a lot of the conformity issues, from what I'm understanding, the governor's office is very interested in going with. And so we certainly want to have some things that will be up for debate with the governor's office. From what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, that there's a great interest in the new administration to do some federal conformity, and we want to work with him on that too.
Mr. Chair, I think that's thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that's right. I think I am not going to speak for the governor, but what I heard on the campaign trail, and we all heard things at the doors, as people have said, I did hear people wanted us to reduce spending, and we've been doing that for about 8 years now. We're still on. We're going to do more. But I did not hear they wanted a property tax increase, and this is a property tax increase. Nobody was telling me, please raise my property taxes. And, I can't speak for the governor, but he was pretty clear on wanting some revenue in the ultimate end game. So I think, to start out with a partial solution with some cuts and then preferring some conformity, I guess I'd be interested to know, kind of how this all works out in your mind about kind of picking and choosing ahead of the final solution. But we all hear different things. We all got the same vote. We all got an election certificate. And I'm not willing to vote to raise property taxes here tonight, but I certainly appreciate the struggle you've got.
Representative Luchesky, you want to read my mind, did you say?
No.
Good luck. Didn't she say that? Read your mind?
Governors.
Okay. Representative Bisgins, Runbeck, Downey, Dabney, Marquardt, and then we'll keep adding to the list, and then I don't know. I'm not aware of any amendments in the Republican caucus. We'll then entertain amendments. If there are none, we will vote, and we'll be adjourned till next Tuesday. Representative Bisgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Point of clarification to Representative Luchesky and the members of this committee. While I would take it as a badge of honor if I actually did introduce a bill to cut anything, it comes back to the word permanent again, Representative Luchesky, and constitutional law. Nothing is permanent, and you know that. And did I introduce a bill to cut anything? Heck no. I introduced a bill which actually increased state spending by over $1 billion from the last biennium. Last biennium, the state spent just around $30 billion. The House resolution I introduced spends around $31 billion. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Bisgins. We're looking also, there is another action I do want to take. We'll go to the next person wishes to speak, Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I just hope we get to a point in this committee for realizing that raising property taxes at the local level is a choice, and it is a choice at the local level. And to keep people, you know, hearing the repetition that, oh, this is an automatic increase, my gosh, isn't it time to talk reality to our cities and our counties and say, look at folks, it's different. It's different. And it, the longer that the members here keep playing and using the finger pointing back and forth, oh, it's the governor's, you know, fault, oh, it's the legislature's fault, you know, we're, I mean, this is going on for 20 years, okay? So I think it's really time to just say simply, cities and counties, live within your means. And this is part of how they're going to live within their means.
Thank you. I'm going to move over to the Property and Local Tax Division. You should have this in your packets. You may want to take a look at this if you're on the Property Tax Committee especially. We're moving over to Property Taxes, House File 22, House File 23. Those are two David's bills regarding property tax 4C classifications. An ordinance bill, House File 49, Fergus Falls Sales and Use Tax Authorized, House File 106, Representative Anderson P., Water Use for Public Safety Purposes, House File 112, Barrett, Taylor's Falls Border City Development Zone Powers established. So for the record, those bills have been moved over to the Property Tax Division. Representative Downey, Dabney, and Marcourt. Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, just a little bit of a follow-on to Representative Runbeck, and it's actually a question for staff. I'm not quite sure who can answer it, and if you've already talked about this today, you can answer my question offline. But I'm curious what the behavior of local governments was as we were increasing local government aid. Were there corresponding decreases in local property taxes? I'm remembering some discussion of this last year. I'm not sure what the correlations are. Is there an equal and corresponding reduction in local property taxes when we increase LGA as compared to some of the statistics that were thrown around about potential increases upon a decrease
Ms.
in
Dalton?
Local government aid?
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, we have looked at that, and again, when we are modeling, for modeling purposes, we do make essentially the same assumption that every $1 of aid increase is about a two-thirds of it gets passed on as a levy decrease. During most of the time that we had aid increases, we had other things going on like levy limits and things like that, and so not all of it ended up being the same. That's also true for sometimes when we've been making aid decreases. There are some levy limit interactions that change some of those assumptions. I can go back and take a look at what that growth has been over time, but generally we've been kind of modeling it consistently both ways.
Representative Downey.
Thank you.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Dalton, you've sparked some questions in my mind about the statewide modeling that you're referring to.
Thank you, Ms. Dalton.
She's fearful. Yeah. We've worked together long enough. Does the statewide modeling, or are you aware of statistics that would tell this committee what percentage of property tax value in the state is businesses?
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, I would actually like to defer to Mr. Hines, because
Mr. Hines,
he deals more with
us,
the
sir?
Whole class rates and okay. How much is in the different classes.
Mr. Hines, didn't we go over this the other day?
I believe we did, but
yeah.
I'll let him.
Mr. Hines, if you could answer Representative Dabney's question, please. Please state your name for the record. I always wonder, you know, I say who somebody is, and I say, state your name for the record. Well, I just did six times. Mm-hmm. Please state your name for the record and who you represent, please.
Mr. Chairman, Steve Hines from House Research. And business property accounts for about 15% of the market value in the state, and it pays about, I'm adding two numbers here, about 35% of the total tax burden in the state. So I suspect that its tax capacity is about that same 35% ratio, although I'd have to do a little more calculating on that, but that's, so it's a little over a third.
Mr. Chair?
Dabney?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to attempt to do math in public, which any of my former math teachers would tell you is not a good idea. What is the total cut to aids and credits in this bill?
Ms. Schell?
$228 million, depending on the year you're looking at, but that's what's on the bottom of the spreadsheet.
And again, Ms. Schell, that is cuts from anticipated receipts. It's not a cut from what they had last year.
It correct? Is a cut from estimated FY12 appropriations or aids. Yeah, it's $228.9 million.
So it's not a cut from what they had last year. It's a cut from what they were anticipating.
Correct.
Representative Dabney?
And Mr. Chair and Ms. Schill, that's $228 million annually.
Correct.
Ms. Schill?
Yes.
So this is where it gets scary. 228 times 2 is $456 million. Thank you. It's really handy to have a calculator on the cell phone. When I do my teaching now and I ask people to do math, they just pull out their cell phone. Nobody owns calculators anymore. It's amazing. So if I multiply that times 0.66, which is the statewide modeling of anticipated property tax increases in order to maintain the same level of public service, I get just around $300 million in increase over the biennium.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanley, that's correct.
Now, Mr. Hines, I'm going to, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hines, I'm going to look at you for this next one. If I multiply that times 0.35, which is the portion of property tax value that the business community represents in the state, I get a property tax increase on businesses of $105 million over the biennium. How am I doing?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dabney, that's correct. Your math is correct.
Yes.
In thinking about it a little bit more, I might want to revise my 35% down a little bit more, because that tax burden includes the statewide levy, which is not part of this discussion. So that maybe backs it down to in the upper 20s%. So you're in the right order of magnitude, but the 105, I would sort of talk you back to 90, something like that, perhaps on a very crude back of the envelope.
Representative Dabney?
Estimate, yes.
All right. Mr. Hines, Mr. Chair, thank you, because when I talk to the small businesses in my district, excuse me, what they say is the hard part these days is lack of demand. Consumers just haven't been out spending the way they have been, and rising property tax values. And then I look at this bill, and it's going to take $170 per renter on average out of the economy. That's less demand. And that's $170 going to lower income people who are going to go out and spend $170 on food, at the hardware store, at the clothing store, getting things for their kids. So it's hurting the demand side and increasing property taxes on businesses. And Representative Erickson said earlier, you know, what we need is more commercial industrial property in the state. And Representative Downey, I think, is the one who taught me that the more you tax something, the less you get it. And $90 million increase on property taxes on businesses strikes me as an increase on something that we say we want and not then helpful in getting us to the goal that we all share bipartisanly of getting the economy up and going and vibrant again like it had been in the past. So thank you for helping me walk through the math, and I should write one of my old math teachers.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Representative Marquardt Downey, and then we'll go to either amendments or a vote, or if anyone wishes to continue to ask questions, that's fine. Loeffler. Okay, Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and we've been talking about going out and talking to our
communities and residents and so forth, and we all do that. And I know that as I was going out and about, there wasn't one senior citizen who told me that, you know, when you solve this $6.2 billion deficit, the first thing you should do is raise my property taxes. I didn't hear anyone say that. And that's going to be to the tune of, in the next 3 years, $300 million to residential homeowners. $300 million. And that's on top of the, the almost $2 billion increase in the 2 years before that, or 8 years before that, just to homeowners. And when I was talking to small business owners, not one of them said the first thing you should do to solve that budget, you know, before you look at efficiencies, before you look at priorities, before you look at zero-based budgeting, the first thing you do before that should be to raise my property taxes. And that's going to be about $130 million over the next 3 years. And I know several members here were on the Small Business Caucus that met throughout the last 2 years. And they sent a survey out to all of the businesses, small businesses. And the number one tax issue that came back was high property taxes. And I know folks will come to this table and talk about people they talk to, but ironically, I had one of those pink slips today to call someone back. And I can go up and get it if you want. But I called the gentleman, and he is a small business owner along Highway 10 near Dilworth, owns storage buildings. And he had built a small building. He said now he is paying $7,000 a year in property taxes. And that's all he talked about to me is, here I am trying, he said this, trying to live the American dream, and I've got a $7,000 property tax bill going up. That was his number one concern. And if you want his name and his number, I'll give it to you tonight as we leave. That's the number one concern. And that's what we're doing here before we look at anything else. And I know in talking about local government aid, and I, Madam Chair, I know we're going to be talking a lot about that in property tax division. But I think before members say there should be a high value or low value placed on it, I think we need to look at every, I mean, I represent a district that gets local government aid. And so I could place a high value on that. If you don't get LGA, you could maybe place a lower value. But I think we have to look at it from a higher perspective because that gets too parochial. And, you know, the thing with local government aid is it's the great equalizer. And you know, one thing, and Representative Lincheski alluded to this, and Representative Knuth, that, you know, people are treated differently on these cuts. Basically, if you don't get local government aid, you know, you look at all the ones in the last column that have zero cuts in this. And Representative Crawford, those aren't our districts. We're getting hit pretty heavy. And yet there's the assumption that local government aid is the only aid that goes out to cities. And yet we know that the property tax refund program, which by the way is probably my favorite of all the programs, 71% of those dollars go out to metro communities, metro residents. And so a lot of those cities that do not get any local government aid are benefiting from those state dollars. Their residents are able to keep those property taxes down in a different way, but through the property tax refund program. Show you how much we love that program. We had a birthday party for it last year, the 35th birthday party in property tax division. But I mean, it's a great program. And so it would be easier maybe for me to say there's one we should cut. And yet I think as we look at this whole thing, we can't just zero in on LGA and say, well, it goes to rural cities or wherever that might be. Because it does, it not only, and in almost all of the data that you can find, including studies that have been done, shows that local government aid keeps property taxes down. But that's not the only reason for it. It also allows cities throughout the state to offer the same type of service, law enforcement, shovel snow off the streets, in one city versus another city, depending on the tax base. It's a great equalizer. And so as we talk about that, we have to keep that in mind. The last point I want to make is the one that always comes up. You know, property taxes are a local decision. You know, I've heard that and I've heard that. Since 2003, we have, the state has cut $1.2 billion from city and about $450 million from counties. That's, what, $1.6 billion. That's huge. And I know the cities in my area, you've got some of those cities that, you know, you might have a half a clerk, you might have a guy who spends 2 hours a day checking the lift stations and the water pumps and so forth, and that's about it. You know, a lot of the cities are, you know, you basically have a law enforcement, you've got street department, and you've got city hall. Some of them might have a rec department, but believe me, these folks out there in our cities and our counties are not a bunch of wild-eyed liberals looking at how to raise property taxes on the folks that they go to church with, they go to wrestling matches with, they go to basketball games with, they see out walking the street at night. They don't want to raise those taxes. So to say here that our actions have no impact, even the revenue department the last 7 or 8 years would always list in their thing that this is going to equate into property taxes. Look at the tax incident report by, you know, the last 8 years, Governor Plenty's own revenue department said in there that cuts will increase property taxes. I think for those to just say we're just going to, you know, not take, you know, clean our hands of it and we're going to cut you $1.6 billion over 8 years and then say, well, you know, don't raise those taxes, and if you do, it's a local decision. I know we can argue that, but let's be realistic. I know we've got a number of members around here who have served on councils and commissions and township boards and school boards, and we know that simply isn't the fact. Our actions do have consequences, and this, there is no doubt that this bill raises property taxes. And I don't, you know, again, we may end up having to do this ultimately. I don't know. But I think to do this before we look at how we can take a more balanced approach or efficiency in that is really bad timing. And I think not putting priorities correctly, where the out of the chute, the first things we do is raise property taxes on senior citizens, on fixed incomes, young families, farmers, and small businesses around this state.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think we're looking at this backwards, and this is one of the frustrations of coming down to state government, where everything seems to be spoken of in totally upside down frames of reference. I mean, if you really look at this, Ms. Dalton said that the correlation between local government aid increases and decreases is the same in terms of local property taxes. And so really, if we're offering $699 million in local government aid in the first year of the biennium and $702 million of local government aid in the second year of the biennium, actually what we're doing is we're reducing local property taxes by a total of $924 million if you apply that same 66% factor. It's like my kids, $10 allowance, boy, they'd like to have 15, you know, they only get 10. And so all we're talking about is the 5 they're not getting. The reality is they're still getting 10. And members, I think we got to look at this and realize, you know, we've teed up this local government aid structure and I think created a really unhealthy dependency and interrelationship between local governments and the state. Confusing all kinds of issues, but in reality, we're offering $924 million of property tax relief with the expenditure of $699 million in 2012 and the expenditure of $702 million in 2013. We are sending checks to local governments in the amount of whatever the math is there, $1.4 billion. Right, state's going to cut checks or whatever however the formula works out. We're sending $1.4 billion to local governments, and according to Ms. Dalton, that's going to translate into $924 million reduction in local property taxes by virtue of us sending that money. So we can talk about what we might like to send. We can talk about, gee, woulda, coulda, mighta, shoulda, if we only could. You know what? When you're out of money, you gotta quit spending. And it's that simple. And the fact that we are still able in these tough times to send that much aid to local governments and that much property tax relief to taxpayers in those jurisdictions, you know what, maybe we ought to look at it a little bit differently and look at the glass half full and understand what's really happening in terms of cash flow here. We keep talking about the projection and what we want to do and what we could do and what we hope to do and how the formula was built 20 years ago. The reality is we don't have the money, and we're still sending a lot to local governments. So we got to look at this in the right frame of reference and quit talking about what we could or would or should or might like to do. We don't have the money.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think I want to pull us back to this. It's the heart of the issue, and it's the issue that you just brought up, Representative Downey, and was brought up earlier about choices on the part of local governments. And I think we just have to be honest. We've taken away their choices in many instances. The easy cuts are gone. The $1.8 billion or $1.6 billion that Representative Marquardt referenced, those were gone. And when we look at what's left in our communities, a lot of our communities are still feeling pretty overburdened and having a really tough time figuring out how they're going to sustain the minimum that there is. And it's our cities have gotten backed out. I mean, they're laying off firefighters, they're laying off firemen that we all count on for our safety, particularly those in the regional centers and our central cities, but everywhere. And in our county services, almost everything they do that's left in the budget is mandated. And it's mandated by us in state law. It says you will, when somebody sees someone acting really crazy, figure out who that person is. Are they covered by health insurance? Do we need to go through pre-commitment activities? Do we need to figure out what kind of mental health care do they need? And you got to get them off the street. When we have, not all of our sex offenders are in Moose Lake. There's a tremendous number of them out in our communities. They may be clustered in certain communities more than others, but we all, when we go into downtown Minneapolis or St. Paul to go to the theater or to a ball game, or because our kids think that's the cool place to be to see the latest music act, we want them to have eyes on the street and people who will deal with it. Our probation caseloads are absolutely embarrassing. Our child protection workers, I mean, Hennepin County laid off 90 and discontinued 90 child welfare workers. These are the people who respond to the calls of neglect and abuse. The most tragic, heartbreaking situations you can have. We've already gone through triage, and we're pulling out even more in the Health and Human Services Committee. Let's just be honest. The easy choices are gone for us as a state, but they're also gone for our local government officials. And to say that our homeowners can just step up and fill the void in our small businesses, I don't think is very realistic either, because they're struggling as well. And so I think we need to give this the kind of seriousness that we need. But I don't think we can assume that there's easy choices out at the local area, except maybe in some communities that are going to take almost no cuts here. And if you look at the high-income suburbs, you'll see a large number of them have very small cuts. But they probably have very small of those kind of demands. Not that there aren't some issues that cross all socioeconomic barriers, but that in terms of the disproportionate demands on local government services and public safety and probation supervision, in responding to mental health, in responding to alcoholic and chemically dependent parents who are threatening the safety and the health and the life in some instances of their children, are disproportionately clustered in the other pages of these printouts. And I think we need to think really seriously, because our decisions have consequences, and I think we have to be a little careful about being cavalier about they can make choices, because I think some of the choices we set up for them are pretty darn uncomfortable. And for me, you know, decimating the child protection system is about as low as you can get, because those kids haven't done anything that deserves the nightmare that some of them are living in, and they deserve our best in terms of response when a neighbor or a school person or someone else calls and says, I think something's going on next door, or I think somebody better figure out what's going on. And you don't want them to be put on a waiting list that who knows how long. It may be too long for the safety of that kid.
There's too many tragedies in every single paper that we pick up, and we ought to step up and make sure that our local governments can respond to those. And then we can talk about the extras. But I haven't heard that there's a lot of extras that people are offering up.
Members, I'd request that we don't question people's honesty. The statement was made, let's be honest. I think we're all honest. We're just having some honest disagreements here.
Mr. Chair, I wasn't questioning anyone. I'm just saying we have to be honest with ourselves by getting the information from the local governments on what they will do rather than making assumptions about what they will do.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I appreciated your comments, Representative Loeffler. I don't agree with your conclusions, but it's always good to hear another perspective here. But Representative Downey, I thought that was a very interesting point at taking a look at the property tax relief that this LGA is for and looking at it that way. It's just a mathematical thing. I thought you did a good job there. But while we had a little bit of time here, I happened to have the Minnesota, let's see, it's the Minnesota Taxpayers Association, just happened to be right in front of me. Did you know that in 1967, the state enacted the first ever 3% sales tax? For what reason? Dedicated entirely to property tax relief. Interesting. Now, what's really interesting is for 2 years, property taxes did go down. 2 years. But 2 years after that, 4 years later, they zoomed up 17% above the 67 levels just in those 4 years. So does it work? It seems as though the more money you give, the more expectations, the more things are going on. Now, here's what's really interesting, though. Then in 1971, 17% increase, Minnesota Miracle comes in. Well, what did the Miracle do? It decided to have an expanded homestead tax credit, homestead credit, passage of the LGA program and local levy limits. And to pay for all that, what they did was increased corporate and personal income taxes. Sales tax went up to 4%, I think temporarily. That was always the thing, temporarily. And the sin and severance taxes were increased. So, again, it seems as though the history goes on temporarily. You have a little bit of benefit and on those property taxes, but then during that same 10-year period, while property taxes increased less than 5% per year, during that same 10-year period, all other state and local taxes increased 171%. So it looks like there's this shell game kind of thing going on, as if that taxpayer pocket, when it gets emptied, that somehow it makes a difference on some of these things. So, you know, you look at this, I thought it was interesting, too, the legislative auditor noted that over this 20-year period, reflecting back to about the same amount of time, city expenditures grew by 65%, but the Office of the Legislative Auditor said the results suggested cities used 82% of the additional aid to finance increased spending and 18% to reduce property taxes. So in reality, first of all, the numbers and the ratio, 82 and so on, not 66%, again, off of the out of the Office of the Legislative Auditor. So welcome to give this to any of you to take a look at. But just a few little things that I think help kind of put that in that perspective, because I think all of our goals, but I would really like to see local governments accountable to their local constituents for the things that they want in their area. And when we disconnect that, I find a lot of the citizens, they just don't, they look at it and they're confused. They have a challenge understanding it because we have changed that out. And did the taxpayers save anything? And worthy goals, honest intentions. But I think the results here speak for themselves. So I think continuing what we have done now may help us to reduce some of those expectations, and I think that is the expectation that our citizens want us to do. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Gottwald, then we'll entertain amendments unless other members wish to speak. Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, I've listened this evening and would respectfully ask that we try to avoid it in the future to the word cavalier. to comments from Representative Marquardt about how this is, we're just passing this off to local government. We can talk about the merits of this bill, and I appreciated Representative Dabney's math. It was good to go through it. We can talk about whether poor communities are hurting or getting hurt more by this than wealthy communities. I think that's all very valid. It's legitimate. We're talking about the bill. But I'm not here telling you that LGA cuts, if it comes to pass, are going to be easy. I served 9 years on a city council at one of our state's regional centers. I presided over 8 balanced budgets. We lost $2.5 million in local government aid 1 year and did not increase tax rates. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't communities that might or might feel the pressure to do so, but I'm not saying it's an automatic. But I will tell you this. What city officials and business leaders in my community are absolutely fed up with is the fact that this state government takes an additional 6% revenue in the next 2 years and has increased spending by 24%. That we can't seem to get our own ducks in a row. We're constantly asking them to be fiscally responsible, but we can't be fiscally responsible. Now, if my city, St. Cloud, had 6% additional revenue to work with, they'd be tickled pink. They'd be happy as can be. But we speak in terms of cuts at this committee. I've heard this in a number of committees now, and I'm trying to find out whether we have literal cuts, because when I, in my business or at my family table or in city government, talk about cuts, we're talking about here's where it was last year and here's where it is next year. Not here's where it was this year. We think it's going to be here and it's going to be here. Right? A smaller increase is not a cut. I hope we can agree on that terminology-wise in this committee. But when you've got 6% more revenue to work with, another $2 billion, the businesses and government leaders in my community are absolutely puzzled why we can't live within our means, because they certainly have to. Somebody mentioned county governments being mandated. I think Representative Loeffler did, and you're absolutely right. We need to remove some of those mandates. We need to stop passing unfunded mandates. I agree. But, you know, we have to get our fiscal house in order. I was going to make some of the comments Representative Downey did, too. These are difficult choices, but they're brought on by the fact that we can't seem to control our appetite for spending. A 6% increase in revenue should be enough to meet the needs of the state of Minnesota. That's not a cut. You know, this whole talk about no new taxes and cuts, you know, we've got $2 billion more tax revenue coming out of the state of Minnesota and coming to St. Paul to meet our needs. And somehow it's just not even close to being enough. And I know there's a lot of blame to go around for that, but that's the business we have to be about, because that's what our local units of government and our local property taxpayers are dealing with. They have to get their house in order, and they're looking at us and saying, why the heck can't you guys do it? And that's the frustrating conversation I have with small and medium and large size employers and my friends who still serve on our city council and our county boards. They keep looking at us and saying, how come we have to do it? Why can't you? So I hope we take on that challenge in this committee.
Okay, I would entertain any amendments. Seeing none, Representative Lincheski.
Chair, I think we've decided we're not going to go through the amendments here tonight. So, I do think we want to take a few more minutes to express, you know, the disappointment with not just the process. This bill was public about 25 hours ago, and it changed dramatically at about 10:30. And so, you know, we're just trying to get our heads around it. So I hope people can understand that, you know, it's a big bill, has big impacts for a lot of people. It actually doesn't have big impacts for a few of us. I mean, some of us in the wealthy suburbs, you know, it's easy to just realize you're not getting hit too much, so hey. But for a lot of the state, it's a huge problem. And I do just want to take a minute to just talk about these, you know, the choices. There is some sense here that, you know, I kind of feel like there's some talking here that, you know, somehow we haven't cut LGA and cut County A and cut, we'll get the votes out. We all voted to cut all of that repeatedly on this side. And we didn't like it, but we did it because the governor said, I'm not tolerating revenue. So we stood up and we cut and we adjourned on time and balanced budget. And now the tables are turned and you got a governor who's kind of saying the opposite thing and, you know, you're going to have to work it out. So we sort of respect how difficult this task is, but it is also difficult for us to hear that we didn't take those votes to make those cuts, because we did. We can pull out all the tax bills for you and show, and we can pull out all the votes, and a whole bunch of people sat here and voted for stuff they didn't want to do, because we did need to be responsible, and we did need to answer to Minnesotans, and we did need to get done on time with the balanced budget. That's exactly what we did. So now we're beginning a process of doing that again, and, you know, I guess I just was, you know, listening to Representative Gottwald, and I heard him very clearly say, you know, hey, there's new revenue. And you're right. Those are ways, semantics to talk about it. You know, some people say it's just a reduction in how much it's growing. Some people say it's a cut. You know, we all understand that if everything is equal. I mean, if you have, you know, 10 people who are carving up 10 bucks, but then 5 more people show up and you have 15 people carving up 10 bucks, you know, it's a new dilemma. And cities don't stay in one place. They grow and they shrink and population changes and needs change and whatever. So they all have sort of a different profile. A few of us, Representative Downey and I think have the best tax bases in the state of Minnesota. I think I have the strongest, the highest CI per capita, highest net tax capacity. And so the way to think about this is if I have to go, Bloomington ISP on the council, if I have to go buy a new hook and ladder fire truck for the fire department, which, by the way, we pay for on our property tax, you know, our residents pay for the fire department. Let's say it's $1 million. You know how easy that is for Representative Downey and I to levy that? You know, I can offload, first off, over half the price to businesses, straight up. Then, due to the net tax capacity and value, I mean, it's a very small effort per capita to buy that new hook and ladder truck. Now, if Representative Erickson wants to buy that hook and ladder truck, her residents are going to pay 50 times per head in taxes what mine are for the same truck.
What we can afford.
And so the reason I'm going through this exercise here is, you know, people are talking about LGA as if the only purpose of it is property tax relief. That really is not the purpose of LGA. It's part of it, but it's mostly, as Representative Marquardt said earlier, and you can say, hey, these are programs, we don't need them, they're not worth anything, is to provide affordable services at affordable prices so that basic needs, like fire trucks, that you're trying to equalize local burns and local effort. And even with LGA, it doesn't happen. So we can just, you know, you can go through the numbers and you can say whose cities have the roughest sort of tax burdens. And even with the program, it's still a pretty good deal for folks who are often in better city, you know, better in a better situation. And I'm glad to see that the Ways and Means Chair is here and listening in. And you know, we have very similar cities, and I was glad to hear Representative Gottwald talk about revenue, because I just hope that as we go forward this year, we really stick to revenue. Because I listened closely in the election year two, and people said we don't need any new revenue. I heard Representative David say that on NPR the other day. I've heard people say it over and over and over and over and over. And so, you know, I hope we're going to hear all the revenue, Mr. Chair, in this committee, because fees and fines and gambling and every other thing under the sun are tax increases too. And so, you know, if the dollar amount is it can't be over this amount, you know, I agree with that, and I just hope, you know, we're going to be faithful about, you know, revenue being brought to this committee. I know there are a lot of tax bills sitting in a lot of committees, and I hope you'll fight for the purview to get them back on here. But you know, it's a difficult choice for people here. We just want to be clear on what we're doing. The bill came out, you know, like I said, an hour and a half ago, and we will probably just think about amendments for the floor and save people the. I'm sorry, 25 hours ago, 6:20, when we saw the bill last night. So, we appreciate having the time to talk about it, and we'll continue the discussions.
Thank you, Representative Lucheski. Representative Rukavina.
Well, Mr. Chair, I wasn't even going to talk tonight, but I do have to say something. You know, life just isn't fair, and, you know, when I look around the committee, you've got Representative Downey, who's tall, dark, and handsome, and I'm short, dark, and homely, you know, and there are cities that are kind of the same thing. I've been here 25 years, you know, 25 years, and when I first got elected, my district, after redistricting, lost 25% of its population. I was first in the state. And the district that got redistricted in with me, Representative Begich, I think you served with him 2 years, Mr. Chair, his district was second in the state, and now I have most of that. And then in the second redistricting I went through, I was third in the state in population loss. And now this year, I'm second, and I think Representative Conan is fourth. I got 33 people in my district, 33,000 people in my district only. Yet, my cities have the same needs. They have the same infrastructure. When I graduated from high school, Virginia had 15,000 people. We have 8,500, I think, is what we're at now. But yet, we have to take care of the same sewer system and, you know, all the other things that we have. And this bill, it's totally unfair. You know, Representative Downey, you don't take a hit in this bill. The Golden Triangle, I call them the three E's, you know, Edina, Egan, and Eden Prairie. They're all zeros and cuts. Yet my city, the city like Hoyt Lakes, that lost LTV Mining Company, doesn't fare well under the LGA formula, because the new LGA formula, you know, it was a population loss since 1990, I believe. If they had used 1980, we would have gotten a lot more aid. Hoyt Lakes was built after 1940. So guess what? In that part of the formula, their entire city doesn't count because it has no pre-1940 housing. And yet, it's probably one of the most devastated cities in the state. And I didn't even look here. I think I saw Hoyt Lakes is going to lose, let me see if I can find it here, a city that has absolutely no tax base anymore, none whatsoever, yet still exists. And you know what? People go to work, they drive 80 miles to another mine. I just happen, life isn't fair. But we try to make it fairer as a state legislator. And yeah, sometimes we play Robin. You know, but I don't think there's a person. Is there a person at the table when they were a kid, they cheered for the sheriff of Nottingham at the table? I cheered for Robin. You know, and that's what we're trying to do here. And I didn't get to Hoyt Lakes, but I'm sure Hoyt Lakes is taking a big hit in this bill, and they have nothing to tax in their district. Nothing to tax whatsoever. So where's the fairness in the bill, Mr. Chair, is what I'm asking, because it's just more regressive taxes for little communities. Lyle, and I think, Lyle, this year you're fourth in the state, or third in population loss. And there is no fairness in the bill. And there are a number of rural legislators on your side, too, where there's no fairness. And I'm not lucky enough, Representative Meyer, to have population growth. Over 30 years, I probably lost 35% of my population. People left are like me, old and dying. So, you know, it's not easy to do. Representative, you've got population growth to help you. So, Mr. Chair, it isn't a fair bill, and, you know, in that sense, I'd at least like to take a roll call.
Okay, roll call being requested. Any other discussion? The motion is, I will renew my motion that House File 129 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Ways and Means Committee. The committee legislative assistant will take the roll.
Representative Davids?
Aye.
Representative Loon?
Aye.
Representative Lencheski?
No.
Representative Anderson?
Aye.
Representative Bills?
Aye.
Representative Biskins?
Aye.
Representative Crawford?
Aye.
Representative Dabney?
No.
Representative Depke?
Aye.
Representative Downey?
Aye.
Representative Joskowski?
Aye.
Representative Erickson?
Yes.
Representative Garofalo?
Yes.
Representative Gottwalt?
Aye.
Representative Hortman?
No.
Representative Kiffmeyer?
Aye.
Representative Knuth?
No.
Representative Kunin?
No.
Representative Lesh? Representative Loeffner?
No.
Representative Mack?
Aye.
Representative Marquardt?
No.
Representative Myra?
Aye.
Representative Paymar?
No.
Representative Rukavina?
No.
Representative Runbeck?
Aye.
Representative Tilbury? Representative Wardlow?
Aye.
Members, while we're counting the votes here, there will be no meeting tomorrow. The meeting tomorrow is canceled. We will meet again at our regular scheduled time on Tuesday. There being 17 ayes and 9 nays, the motion prevails. Good government all the time. We are adjourned, members.